Good evening, everybody. You're listening to Tri-State Sports Guys coming to you live from beautiful Norwalk, Connecticut. We got the whole team on board here this evening. I'm Mike DePalma, co-host Danny Santarella sitting to my right. We got our producer back in studio after a little hiatus, Tony D, behind the glass.
Go Brazil.
Good to have him. We got a really good show tonight. We're going to be joined by the great Pete Rose, which is a thrill for all of us here in studio. Any baseball fan, over the age of 30 is going to have a lot of nostalgia for a guy like Pete Rose. So we got him calling in very, very shortly. We're going to get into some debate stuff. We're going to do a little like a format change here, Danny, a little bit. We talked about it. Debates is what people want to do. So we're going to debate in the second half of this show who's got a better chance of winning a World Series first, the New York Metropolitans or the Chicago Cubbies. And after the trade, I think a lot of people are loving what the Cubs are doing, what the team's doing, all the rest. So I'll be curious to see where that goes. And we'll get Neil Lynch on in a little bit to join us for that discussion. I don't even know what Neil's thoughts are on this, but I'm pretty excited.
Well, did you read his anti-Cubs article just a few weeks ago? There's no shot, he's saying, the Cubs. There's
yeah,
no
but he's
shot.
So,
plus the homer.
No, he's not.
He's
going to
be.
Anti,
in this argument, he will be.
He is so anti-Mets, dude. You know that. He was anti-Mets 3 weeks into the season.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing about the argument, and I've been thinking about it for a couple of days since we came up with it, is I can honestly see myself being swayed because I'm not that far from it now, and it's not as though the Cubs are anywhere close right at this moment. So
yeah.
It should be fun. I'm interested to hear what a couple of Mets fans got to say about their club. And love the deal, love the Samardzija trade, love all that. You and I were just talking about it off air a little bit, so I'm excited to talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many shortstops the Cubs believe they could play at once. They're just going to just say,
yeah,
we're just going to be deep at shortstop.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like a lot of teams like to be very deep at wide receiver. The Cubbies just come in and say, we're just going to stockpile shortstops.
You think they're going to go with, like, multiple shortstop sets? Like the
well, the new with the
too?
Shift and all the rest?
Yeah, they might.
We'll ask Pete that when we got him on. We'll ask Mr. Rose what he thinks about the shift and whether they could just roll in, just rolling in shortstops.
Right.
Put Castro out in center, bring him in. You don't know. Like, your defense, it's like a Rex Ryan defense.
Yeah, I don't
you show something, and then it shifts.
Yeah, I don't think you shifted. I don't think you shifted Pete Rose.
No,
I get the feeling when I watch those old clips, just bullets to down the line each way, both sides of the plate. So
yeah,
but that's going to be fun because what I'm really excited for, other than talking to Mr. Rose, is hearing you guys break down your Mets. It's going to be fun for me, as though I'm a little fly on the wall, to listen to you two break down the Mets because I know both of you. You're positive.
I am.
Neil is the downtrodden Mets fans, but
which he was not with like last year. He
I know,
wasn't that
but
guy.
That's what's going to be fun. Is I feel like I could get in there, say a little something, pro-Cubby, because that's what I'm going to be, and then hear you guys cry and moan at each other.
Oh.
So I'm looking forward to it.
The Mets-Cub talk, which is really what the nation wants to hear,
that's it.
Is just people breaking down the Mets and the Cubs. Well, before we get to that, we're going to get to something that people actually do want to listen to, which is one of the greats of all time, and it's an honor and a thrill to have him on the show, calling us on the Tucci Lumber Hotline, Mr. Pete Rose. Pete, are you with us?
Yes, sir. Just waiting to talk some baseball. Sitting here watching the Cubs and the Reds, 1-1. Billy Hamilton about ready to steal number 38. But go ahead.
Yeah, Billy Hamilton, man. That guy could fly. That guy could motor. Exciting guy to play. Now, the talk up here, obviously, all season long, as you can imagine, is Derek Jeter. And for an all-time great like Derek, he's got a lot of detractors for whatever reason, and people can't really seem to decide who to compare him to. But your name does come up as a guy who mostly a singles hitter, played the game the right way, hustled, can hit the ball to all fields. Do you find that as an apt comparison, as Derek Jeter being a Pete Rose-type player, or do you find him comparable?
Well, first of all, I don't think I don't know what your description of a singles hitter is. I mean, I don't know about Derek. I know he's got a couple 150 home runs. I got over 1,000 extra base hits, but I think we're similar in this respect. That we both go to the ballpark every day. We put the uniform on. We don't complain. We work hard. We hustle. We get hits. We score runs, and we help our team win games. That's what he did his whole career, and that's what I did my whole career. And the only difference in him and I, as far as I see it, is I played five positions. He just played one. But the position he played was a tough position. Shortstop's a tough position to play, and no question about it, first ballot Hall of Famer. one of the best Yankees of all times. You know, he's probably in the top 10, no question about that. I don't want to say he's the best Yankee ever, the second best Yankee ever, because you got Babe Ruth and you got Mickey Mantle and you got Joe DiMaggio and you got Lou Gehrig and you got Yogi and you got Whitey and you got Mariano. So there's a lot of guys in that list, and his name deserves to be on there. But he's one of them guys that you never hear a bad thing about him on or off the field. And he's really he's a credit to the game of baseball.
Oh, I agree, and I even as a Met fan myself, you got to appreciate what he does on and off the field. And
sure.
And what,
sure.
You know what you said about playing the game the right way, coming to the park ready to play, and playing for your team. That's another thing that you've become synonymous with. So anytime you see young guys like right now, Adam Eaton, people want to compare him to you because he hustles and all the rest.
Yeah.
Now we talk a lot about on this show about playing the game the right way. Who hustles? How annoying
right.
is it to see a guy lollygag? Now take us back to your playing days. I'm of the opinion that people have always been lollygagging, and we've had Ernie Banks on a couple times. He doesn't say a bad thing about anybody, so he won't. But bring us back to your playing days. Is it,
you know, you have to understand. I come up in '63, and we had loafers in the '60s. We had them in the '70s. We had them in the '80s, and you have them today. But it's kind of strange to me, or I don't want to say amazing to me, that the people pat me on the back, they pat Derek on the back, and all we did is play the game the way you're supposed to play it. You're supposed to go out there and bust your ass every day you play. And if they want to pat me on the back for doing that, but everybody should play like we do, or like we did. I mean, that's the right way to play the game. When you got people paying good bucks to sit in the stands and watch you play, your obligation is to bust your chops on a daily basis. I just don't get these players. I guess the best thing to say, I don't know if you agree with this or disagree with it, but in today's baseball, it's not cool to play like I did. It's not cool to knock second basemen on their ass. It's not cool to have collisions at home plate. It's not cool to yell at pitchers if they get you out. You know, but that was all part of the game back in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. And I had to play the way I had to play to be successful. I think Derek had to play the way he played to be successful too. So if you know one way to play, that's the way you got to play.
Yeah, it's amazing to me because you're exactly right. But all the fans I talk to would want to see more Pete Rose in the game and are going to be sad to see Derek Jeter go. So who said it's not cool? Like, I get it because you're exactly right. The cool thing now amongst the players is to you know, hit a ground ball to the shortstop and lollygag it or do whatever. But when did that become cool?
The cool thing to do today is to go up there, and whether it's 2-0 or 0-2, swing the same way. Just try to hit the ball out of the ballpark. And the owners are partly responsible for this, too, because how many guys do you know strike out 150 times, but they'll hit 25 to 30 home runs, and they'll make $10 million a year? Owners aren't wanting these guys. How many guys get 200 hits now? None. Nobody got 200 hits last year. Derek and I, Derek got it 5 times. I got it 10 times. Ishiro got it 10 times. You know, Tony Gwynn got it 5 times. Steve Garvey got it 5 or 6 times. So that's the way we played. We want to get base hits. But guys today, they don't concentrate on base hits. All they want to do is hit home runs. There's no adjusting in the batter's box. I watch baseball 2 games a day, and nobody makes adjustments in the batter's box when they get 2 strikes on them. It's amazing.
Oh, I agree with you. How frustrating is that for you? I mean, is that something where you're
When I look at these lineups of these teams, and there's just nobody hitting 300. You know, you can count guys on one or two hands that hit 300. There's so many guys hitting 220, 230, 240, 250, 210. Schwisser hitting 198. I mean, I'm trying to figure out, we're in July. How are these guys still in the lineup? I mean, pitching is good today, but it's not that good, is it, where you can't have at least one 300 hitter in your lineup?
Yeah, I don't think there's any in New York, unless Daniel Murphy's hovering, but I don't think there's any in either team in New York. It is.
Well, Ishiro's hitting 303. I think Ishiro's hitting 303 going in. So, you know, and he's had a tremendous career. He's a 318 or 319 lifetime hitter, and Derek's a 310 or 312 lifetime hitter. But they're getting at the end of their career. But the guys just don't understand that I'd rather have three singles in an inning than one home run. Because if I got three singles, I got a chance of scoring three runs. That's
yeah.
the way I look at it. Maybe I'm wrong. And if you're a singles hitter, throw in a double every once in a while or throw in a triple every once in a while. You know, I think guys like Billy Hamilton are bringing back the speed-type guys to the game of baseball because the way these guys play defense today, a guy that can run like that upsets defense. He just
oh, yeah.
makes everybody jittery. And I think that helps you to win the game if everybody's jittery.
I agree, and especially the infielders, they seem to go in robot mode,
yeah.
and it's a routine ground ball, and this is, I know I got to take my one step, I could pat my glove, I could do this, and you look at Billy Hamilton or Jose Altuve, and they're down the line already.
And you get a pitcher that's got a good curveball or a good breaking ball, he don't throw it as much because it's easy to steal on a breaking ball or a curveball. So what does
yeah.
he do? He throws a guy hitting second or third fastballs all day. So,
yeah.
you know, there's speed, you don't need all speed on a team. Okay, what you need is you need guys that we call table setters. That's usually guys that can hit first and hit second. You know, Bench and Perez they're both in the Hall of Fame because they got over 1,600 RBIs. But myself, Griffey, and Morgan set the table for those guys. You know, Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris cleaned up the guys that were on base in front of them. Derek Jeter's got a lot of runs scored because he set the table for the guys behind him. You know, that's why you have a batting order, guys. That's why some guys deserve to hit first or second. Some guys deserve to hit seventh or eighth. Some guys deserve to hit, say, on the bench and be pinch hitters. Some guys are short men. Some guys are long men. Some guys are starters. That's just the way it is in baseball. Everybody has a niche, and the quicker you can find out what you can do and what you can't do, then just go out and do the things you can do on a daily basis. Don't try to do something you can't do, and that's what guys today do so much. They try to make it all happen themselves. It's a team effort, man. It's 25
yeah.
guys working together.
Yeah, well, that leads me perfectly to my next question, which is, you know, there's a lot of changes in the game, you know, on the surface from when you played and you talk about specialized bullpens and now you've got, you know, everybody swinging for the fences on 0-2 and you know, instant replay and, you know, can't run over the catcher. But at the end of the day, it seems to me that the teams that win are still going to be the teams that play the game like you just talked about, like the Cardinals from last year or like the Oakland A's, the guys who could – so. Although all of the everything around it has changed, do you still think at the end of the day baseball's the same game? You win the same way you win.
The good teams get the guy from second to third with no outs. The good teams put the sacrifice punt down at the end of the game when you're in a tie ball game or a one run down or one run ahead. The good teams do that because the good teams play defense. You know, pitching is defense, and you know, usually the good teams are strong up the middle. That hasn't changed and never will change. But you're not going to win a pennant. You're not going to win a division if you play sloppy defense. We had guys that were closers. You know, you had Goose Gossages and people like that back in them days. I don't think we didn't have guys that just were specialized pitchers in saving games. But, you know, you had, like, I think, Juan Marichal. He's got 280 complete games.
Yeah.
Think about that.
I can't even think about it.
You know, you had guys like Koufax and Drysdale and Seaver and Nolan Ryan and Bob Gibson. When they went out and started something, they wanted to finish it. If they couldn't, they'd understand the guy, take him out and bring the reliever in. But they wanted to finish what they started. And, you know, so they pitched seven, eight, nine innings. A lot. You know, they just go out there and they pitch. They pitch every 4 days, every 5 days, and they used to throw on the side on the second day, and now all they do is sit over there with a pitch counter, and all of a sudden someone said when you get up around 98 pitches, you're supposed to be tired. Why is that? You know, I remember, was it last year, Lynchgren, he pitched a no-hitter and threw 143 pitches? So it can be done, can it?
Yeah, David Cohen used to throw 140 pitches a game for the Mets back in the late 80s, early 90s, and look at his career. It's insane.
And he never had no arm problems. You know,
no.
If you keep telling these guys they're going to have arm problems, mentally they're going to think they got arm problems.
Yeah, Pete,
you know,
this is the answer.
Some pitchers can go seven strong innings. Some pitchers can go nine innings because the pitchers who go late in the ball game, you know this, they keep their pitch count down. They don't go 3-1, 3-2 on everybody. They get some double play balls. You know, they got a good infield. You know, the double play balls, I don't care if I walk the first guy, let the next guy hit the first pitch for a double play. It's five pitches, two outs. That's what you got to do. Forget these long counts and these long innings. That's what wears these pitchers out.
Yeah, Pete, this is Dan here. I just wanted to ask a question real quick about,
sure.
You know, an interview I saw recently with Hank Aaron where he was talking about some guys he emulated when he was coming up, and he listed mostly Negro League players that probably, you know, a lot of people, especially in my age group, wouldn't know. I mean, were there guys
right.
when you were a young kid coming up, and if so, who were they that you looked at and said, you know, I like a little piece of what this guy does at the plate, or you tried to be like this guy? I mean, who were some of those guys
yeah.
for you growing up?
Well, believe it or not, I didn't know much about the Negro League players when I was growing up because I, you know, I grew up about 5 miles from Crosley Field. So what did I become? I become a Cincinnati Red fan, and believe it or not, my favorite player when I was growing up was Ted Kwiatkowski, who was a big home run hitter that played first base and had them big guns is the reason they cut out the sleeves for the Reds. And he ended up being my batting coach. But he just was a good hitter, plus he was a home run hitter. And a big day for me was when the Dodgers came into Cincinnati. Why? Because, as you know, the Dodgers had a backup shortstop by the name of Don Zimmer, who just passed away a month ago or so. I went to the same high school, grew up in the same neighborhood. Our dads were Little League teammates. And whenever they come into town, that was a big deal for my family to go see the Dodgers because we got to wait out back after the game was over to say hi to Don. And he introduced me to Jackie Robinson. He introduced me to Carl Furillo, Gil Hodges, Roy Campanella, Sandy Amoros, Duke Snider. I got to meet all those guys, even though I was a Reds fan. I got to meet those guys, Pee Wee Reese, who Don played behind, Junior Gilliam. I mean, I can name them all. You know, Carl Erskine, Don Newcomb, the Joe Black. I mean, they were all on the Dodger team, and I'm the biggest Cincinnati Reds fan in the world, and I'm meeting all these Dodgers. But that was a big time of my life when the Dodgers used to come into Cincinnati just because of Don Zimmer.
Yeah, I mean, you hear a lot of stories around here about Zim over the years. He's a, you know, fan favorite. Everybody loves him. The other question I have for you, Pete, is when, you know, Mike and I talk about it here all the time in terms of Hall of Fame balloting, things like that. I mean, what are your thoughts when you see guys like McGuire or Palmeiro or Clemens or Bonds or any of those kinds of guys on the ballot, and it seems as though you just can't even get your foot in the door? I mean, does it bother you? Are you over it? How does that work in your mind?
Well, I'm glad you said that because you explained it the right way, okay? For people who are Pete Rose fans, don't bitch about me not being in the Hall of Fame because nobody connected to PEDs to date has gone to the Hall of Fame. Now, if you're complaining about me not being in the ballot, you got a legitimate ballot. Now, if you're going to ask me, and you guys are probably going to disagree with me, but I would vote for Barry Bonds for the Hall of Fame. I mean, you got to remember, these guys are friends of mine, okay? I would vote for Roger Clemens. The guy won 7 Cy Youngs. The other guy won 7 MVPs. You know, Palmeiro, 5,000 or 500 home runs, 3,000 hits. You know, and you know, who am I to sit in Las Vegas, Nevada, and talk to you guys and judge these guys? Now, Mark McGuire, I don't know about him. Mark McGuire was a great home run hitter. We all know that, okay? We know that because he hit 565 home runs or something like that. But Mark wasn't like the other guys I just mentioned. He couldn't run. He wasn't a good fielder. You know, he wasn't a good base runner. So I don't even know. He's a little bit like Dave Kingman with more home runs. You understand what I'm saying? And I'm not trying to put Mark McGuire down, but I don't think Mark McGuire is in the same sentence with the Hall of Famers like Bonds and Clemens and Palmeiro and Sammy Sosa. Sammy Sosa, I think, hit over 60 home runs 3 times and never led the league in home runs. I mean, think about that. He beat Roger Maris's record 3 times, never led the league. How is that possible?
I agree with you. And actually, you'll be surprised. I actually do agree with you. And I this is Mike again. I wish you could have an honest discussion about these guys like you are. And everybody wants to be so cut and dry. Okay, anybody who's got any kind of PEDs back behind them, they're out. But Barry Bonds is a Hall of Famer in my mind. And so is, you know, Mike Piazza. And so is Roger Clemens. And I agree with you on McGuire because you could have an honest conversation. This guy was just a power hitter. So that leads me to my a rant that Dan disagrees with me wholeheartedly on. But to me, the Hall of Fame has lost so much, in my opinion, because if you're not going to have the all-time hits leader, the all-time home runs leader, what is it going to – I mean, 50 years from now, I'm talking to my grandkids And I want to talk about the all-time greats, and you've got all of these great players not in the Hall of Fame, then what's it really mean? And I know you still probably want to get there, but after all of this,
yeah.
Has the Hall of Fame kind of dropped as far as importance?
Well, first of all, I'm not in the Hall of Fame because I screwed up. Okay, so let's let everybody know about that. I'm not going to whine on your show because I'm not in the Hall of Fame. And secondly, a lot of people don't know this. I know you guys know it though, but the Hall of Fame is owned by the Clark family in Cooperstown. All baseball does is supply the players through the voting of the Sports Writers of America. Every year, that's all baseball does is supply its players to the Hall of Fame. You know, so it's a different entity. The Hall of Fame is different than baseball.
Right.
Sure, I'd like to go to the Hall of Fame, but you're right. I mean, what's going to happen when this keeps multiplying? I mean, I know Griffey's going in soon, and because of drugs and things like that. Let's talk about BGO. Okay, how screwed did he get?
Yes.
There's a guy last year. There was a guy last year that sent his ballot in without a name on it because of PEDs. Is that fair to Craig Biggio, who missed by one vote? And here's a guy that got 3,000 hits. He's the first guy in 80 years that didn't go in the first ballot with 3,000 hits. He's got over 500 doubles. You know, I know he's got a .280 lifetime batting average, but I'm just saying, I don't understand. I just don't understand some of these guys who vote. One guy voted for Sean Casey. Another guy voted for Paul LaDuca. Why are these guys voting?
Well, that goes to my point. And the guys that will never vote for somebody on their first ballot for all these things. This is if it's supposed to be as important as it is, and they make it seem. You have these little pencil pushers making these grand decisions because they want to make a statement about themselves and make it about themselves. It makes me not even want to pay attention. If I'm going to debate with somebody at a bar or at a barbecue about a baseball guy, it doesn't matter, in my opinion, whether in the Hall of Fame or not. I'm going to talk to you about watching him play, his numbers, what he did in the clutch, blah, blah, blah. And
right.
the, at this point, the Hall of Fame, to me, it's just a bunch of nerds deciding who gets in and who doesn't.
Well, if you're at that barbecue and someone mentions a name and you got to think about it, okay, he's not in the Hall of Fame. He shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. See, I got my philosophies on this, too, and maybe you guys would disagree or agree with this. I don't understand why it's such a big deal to go into the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. If you're a Hall of Famer, you should go in on the first ballot. See, here's the way it works. You guys know this. There's a ballot that each writer gets. It's got 10 slots in it. Never has been, never will be a year when there's more than 10 deserving going in the Hall of Fame. Why does baseball worry about... See, what happens, though, is these guys look at the ballot, and they'll say, oh, this is Griffey. He's the biggest name on there. Oh, this guy, we can put him in next year because he'll be the biggest name next year. Like Tony Perez got almost 1,700 RBIs. Okay? Why did it take him 10 years to make the Hall of Fame? Or how about this one? Okay? Why did Tom Seaver get the highest percentage of vote in the history of the Hall of Fame? I want to sit in a room with a guy and talk to him and ask him, why didn't you vote for Hank Aaron for the Hall of Fame? Why didn't you vote for Stan Musial for the Hall of Fame? Why didn't you vote for Willie Mays for the Hall of Fame? I got to hear what they got to say. I just don't understand it. How could you look into a mirror and not vote for Hank Aaron for the Hall of Fame? The guy's a 300 hitter with 755 home runs and 2,200 RBIs, and he was a Gold Glove outfielder and he could steal bases. Where did Hank lack?
You know, Pete, this is Dan again. I agree with you 100%. And I think, you know, those writers who hide behind this guise of, you know, I didn't vote for Willie Mays because I knew everybody else would. So I knew he'd get in anyway. And I've always kind of argued with people that, you know, maybe someday you're going to get down to one where 200 guys didn't vote for a certain guy who should definitely get in. And then they go, oh, geez, he only got 72% of the vote or something like that. So it's kind of a silly thing, but the question I have for you is, I've been up to Cooperstown a handful of times,
yeah.
And they have
yeah.
these big scoreboards where they have, you know, you right at the top of the hits list, obviously. They have Joe Jackson way up there, you know, with his career batting average, and Eddie Seacott for complete games and all that. And my question for you, and I've had this for a lot of people I've argued with, is how would baseball be negatively affected if guys like you or Jackson or Seacott or any of those guys were in? I mean, would it hurt the game? Because I only see it helping. I think bringing those legendary names like yourself.
Well, in my case, I can only answer my case. And I can't believe there's people around here that if I was reinstated would say, oh, that way you can get away with gambling. Well, guys, I've been suspended 25 years. You know, the last time I checked, and maybe I'm wrong, but the guy who shot the Pope got a second chance. Yeah, he got a second chance. No, that's the truth. I mean, Joe Jackson, I don't know nothing about. I know Joe Jackson was a great player. But I had this conversation with a guy today because Joe Jackson took money. He took money to throw a World Series game. I bet on my own team to win. And I know he hit 370 in the World Series. And this guy said, well, how did he throw the game if he hit 370? I said, how do you know he couldn't hit 570?
Yeah.
You don't know that. You don't know the circumstances. So, you know, it's oranges and apples when you compare Joe Jackson to myself. We both were wrong, no question about it. But, and another thing, I had nothing to do with influence the records of baseball. The records of baseball are sacred. You know that, and I know that. That's why a baseball card is worth more than a football card, or a basketball card, or a hockey card, because it goes back to 1869 when baseball started in Cincinnati. And you know, wouldn't it be nice if you guys could talk to Babe Ruth today, or you could talk to Roger Maris today, or you could talk to Hank, and he would talk about Barry Bonds and how it felt when he broke his record. You know, I know it had to hurt Hank, but Hank's not the type of guy that's going to say anything about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the situation we're in today. So, you know, let everybody be. I wish everybody would go to the Hall of Fame. But there again, I think one of you guys said it. You know, the Hall of Fame is kind of losing its luster a little bit, and that's partly because of the voters. It's because of the voters. Like last year, nobody went in. What do you mean nobody went in? With all those guys on that ballot, nobody went in. And you got Craig Biggio. Yeah, I mean, who missed by one frickin' vote? How can you miss by one vote?
It boggles your mind, Pete, and it's so frustrating that to me, that's why I don't even like to have Hall of Fame discussions anymore, because it's an exercise in futility. You sit there and talk about it, and then decisions are made by people who have their own agenda.
I got one for you. I got a question for you guys. You've asked me some questions, okay? Think about this one. Is Derek Jeter going to get every vote?
No, and that's a travesty. It's a joke. Like you said, exactly like you said, somebody's going to have to look at themselves in the mirror when they're brushing their teeth at night after they submit their ballot and say, I did not vote for Derek Jeter. Why? How is that going to happen? You couldn't have him. There's not enough vodka in the world that would make me sleep if I was a guy who didn't vote for Derek Jeter.
Well, what a lot of them will say, you know what they'll say? Well, I didn't vote for him on the first ballot because Babe Ruth didn't make it on the first ballot. What has Derek Jeter got to do with Babe Ruth?
Exactly.
What has he got to do with Joe DiMaggio?
Exactly. Now, well, you're in a unique position because you just did a game up for the Bridgeport Bluefish where you were the honorary manager, what it showed was, I mean, you have, I don't know, and I can't speak for everybody in the world, but I'm just saying as a sports fan, as a guy who does a radio show, gets a lot of calls, you are universally loved. I'm going to tell you that right now, and that's not blowing smoke up your ass. That's just the truth. And to have
we had a good time at that game. It was fun being around. See 11 players on my team that night. Have the big league experience. 60% of the players in that Atlantic League have big league experience. That's good because what did that create when I managed that ball club? It created guys who've been there and know how the life is, guys who are trying to get back there. That's why they're busting their ass in independent league. That independent league is probably equivalent to double-A baseball. And a certain night, like that night I was there, when the guy pitched, it was probably equivalent to triple-A baseball. But these guys have been in the dream of being in the big leagues, and they want to get back. And it was a lot of fun for me. And we played good. We played aggressive. We won the game 2-0, and we had a good crowd. We had we just missed a sellout by 150 people, which was really good for the city of Bridgeport. And I really enjoyed myself. And I'm going to do the same thing over in Cincinnati at the Florence Freedom in September. But to see these guys that are trying to get back to the big leagues, They listened. They worked hard. The only problem I didn't like about it, guys, I had to go out and coach first base because I would have rather spent time in the dugout talking to these guys during the game. See, because when I'm in the dugout, they're on the field. When I'm in first base coaching, they're in the dugout. So the only time I had to talk to them was during batting practice.
Well, that was even my question, because you're talking about you watch two games of baseball a day and you get frustrated by people's approaches with two strikes and the rest. I mean, would you just have so many things built up in you that just poured out of you when you finally got to be on the field and talk to these players? Was it just like you couldn't get enough out? I mean, that's how I would feel. You'd been bottled up with all this knowledge. I mean, was that your first emotion when you stepped on the field?
Well, what I do is I watch the game, and if they make mistakes, I, in my own polite way, try to explain why you did this or why you shouldn't do that. Okay, you don't yell at people in front of their peers, but you just try to explain the game to them and keep them alert. Don't get thrown out third in the inning. Don't get thrown out second to start the inning. You know, things like that. You get a guy on second, if you have to use your elbow, get him over. You get a guy on third, less than two outs. You know, what's the pitcher going to do? He's going to keep the ball down. Why? Because you're trying to hit a fly ball. Don't swing at the first pitch he throws up there. That's what these guys do. They can't wait. Hitters today don't understand. If there's one out and base is loaded and you're hitting, you are in the driver's seat. The pitcher's in the jackpot. You're in the driver's seat. Now, if it's 0-2, he's in the driver's seat. But the pitchers won't make a mistake unless you give them a chance to make a mistake. And even the Gibsons and the Koufaxes and the Drysdales and the Marischals make mistakes. And when they make that mistake, you got to jump on it. Some pitchers will make two or three mistakes at an at-bat. Others will only give you one shot. You better do good with that one shot. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we had a Pete Tucci, who owns Tucci Lumber, one of our sponsors. We had him on because he actually played with Tony Gwynn, who's out in the Padres organization. And he came on and told some stories, and he said just talking to a guy like Tony Gwynn about hitting, even as a guy, I mean, Pete was a former first-round pick, all the rest, great player. He's like, you know, you get some of these all-time greats, and you get just talking, hitting with them. He goes, you could spend all day. He said he sat there and started talking to Tony Gwynn at his locker one afternoon, and the entire clubhouse just gathered around to listen to Tony Gwynn talk. And I get the sense that these guys playing for the Bluefish would be the same way around you. Did you get that sense? I mean, were people coming to you with that sponge-like mentality, like, let me just learn as much as I can in this little bit of time?
And another good thing about that situation is, you know, I have a hands-on personality. I mean, I love young players. I love a guy that's busting his ass, try to help him get back to where he's trying to get back to it. And, you know, any advice not necessarily a hitting method or something like that, because to be honest with you, Tony Gwynn is one of the better hitters I've ever seen, but he would confuse me because, you know, he was the type of guy that there's two things I never did in my life. Never hit off the tee, and I never watched myself on video. Tony used to watch video every day. You know, if I'm in a good groove and I'm hitting 440 for the month, you know, why do I want to watch tape? I get a kick out of these guys today. You know, you got these video machines in the clubhouse, and a guy is swinging a 3-2 pitch and bounces for strike three, and he'll run in the clubhouse to watch it. Why in the hell do you want to watch that? I mean, I want to go in and throw it away. If I hit a rope to right center, that's the one I want to watch, not the one that bounced in front of home plate, because all that does is agitate you as a human being. I mean, it's pretty simple. But, you know, I kept it simple, guys. Tony was kind of involved. I think he got that from Ted Williams. Like, I remember one time in spring training, I was talking to Ted Williams, and he said, how important are your wrist in hitting? And I always thought, it's everything. He said, okay, take this bat. Hit me against the fence. I swung the bat. When you hit the ball, your arm is straight, your back arm straight. Look at your wrist. My wrist hadn't did anything. He said, your wrists are only important in your follow-through. Then he hit me on the knee, and he hit me on the hip, and he hit me on the side, and he hit me on the shoulder. He had me worrying about everything. I said, Mr. Williams, I said, you might have been the greatest hitter in the history of baseball, but my philosophy is to see the ball and hit the ball hard somewhere. He said, well, whatever works for you, son, you're doing pretty good. But he confused me. You can't get these young hitters confused today. And you let them get confused, they'll get confused. It's like a golf swing. You know, the golf coaches, you hit the ball right down the middle, great swing. You slice the next one, you did this wrong. You hit the next one to the left, you did this wrong. The next one you hit down the middle, great swing. You know, I mean, it's repetition, man. It's over and over and over again. And baseball is a tough game, you guys know, because I don't care what color you are, how much money you got, where you're from, you're going to make 7 out of 10 outs. Just the way it is. If you're Kobe Bryant, you're not going to buy that shirt if he hits 3 out of 10. If you're LeBron James, we're not buying that jersey if he hits 3 out of 10. If you're Aaron Rodgers, completing 3 out of 10, we're not buying his jersey.
Yeah, that sounds like my high school numbers at quarterback. But they, you know, I see a lot of young guys come up now, and they look like machines. They look like robots with how, like, you know, and you could tell they've been the AAU, whatever, travel teams, and everything is so pretty up there. And you're exactly right. There's no adjustments. There's no – and they run in, like you say, it is so frustrating because baseball is such a beautiful game. And one of the beautiful things is that you could be a great hitter doing it your way, and Ted Williams could be a great hitter doing it his way, and Tony Gwynn could do it his way. And you could talk to each other and bounce ideas, and that's the beauty of
it.
But it's not going to change your approach and everything like that. That's what I love about it.
But the one thing we're all going to have in common is we're aggressive, okay? That's like most Hall of Famers. The one thing they all have in common is they're all aggressive, and they're all hungry. I mean, that's just the way stars are. And you know, it's kind of amazing that I had a kid, a guy come in here today, get an autograph in Vegas, and he says my kid plays travel ball. I said, oh, really? I said, how old is he? He said 6. I said, he plays travel ball, and he's 6, huh? Okay. I said, let me tell you what travel ball is. Travel ball is when the Reds go to the airport, get on a plane, and fly to Miami to play the Miami team. That's travel ball. Not your kid going from this county to this county to play travel ball. Because I believe kids can learn something from every sport. So I like guys who play football, play basketball, play soccer, play baseball. You know, and most travel ball, the guys who play travel ball, that's all for the family. That's all for the dad and mom sake. My kid plays travel ball. They got their chest sticking out. You know, my kid plays travel ball. What the hell is travel ball? I mean, travel ball is just playing another game. Let the kid play football. Let him play basketball. Let him be a DJ on the radio. Anything. Okay.
No, I completely agree with you. Playing multiple sports helps you in a lot of different ways. Definitely. So you're out in Vegas. You have a regular standing gig over at the Mandalay Place doing autographs.
Yeah, I'm at the Art and Music Store at Mandalay Place, and about 20 days a month. And hey, it's fun, guys, because it's like 4.5 hours a day. It's like me going to the ballpark and playing a doubleheader without a period of time to get a sandwich in between. It's a 4.5 hour game every day.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, did the bug get you at all when you were in Bridgeport? I mean, would you ever consider going to an independent league team and coaching full time or doing something like that?
It's not that I wouldn't want to, guys. I just can't afford to.
Yeah.
I just can't afford to because the money's, you know, you got to remember these players playing in an independent league at Bridgeport, the most they can make on a monthly basis is $3,000. That's the most they can make. And the managers, I would probably say, make $50,000-$60,000 a year. Those are dedicated guys. Those are dedicated guys. Just like college coaching. You know, the only thing I'd like to do in baseball is manage. That's the only good job other than being a player or a general manager. That's the only guys that make any money in baseball are players, general managers, and managers. And that's the guys who make the money. The rest of one of the worst jobs in baseball is to be a coach. You know, because they don't get paid that much. You know, they get years on the pension, which is good. And if they go to the World Series, that's good. They get a World Series share. But, you know, these guys today think they're supposed to come out and start throwing batting practice at 1 o'clock when they get there. And I talked to Tony Perez, who works for the Marlins all the time. He said, all they do is want to go down the cage and see how far they can hit it. They don't work on anything. They don't work on anything. But they need arms to throw them BP every day. You know, that's why when I used to do the post game shows or the pregame shows, you get a watch here or a certificate here. I always gave it to the coaches. So that's why when I left Cincinnati to go to Philadelphia, I bought 10 Jeeps and gave them to all the coaches in the clubhouse guys because I could call them on Christmas Day. Can I get an hour of batting practice? And they give me an hour of batting practice. That's just the dedication that these coaches have today.
Pete, this is Dan again. It's my last question for you here. You brought up talking about college ball, independent ball. I mean, has there ever been any interest in getting into college ball, you know, managing, hitting coach, anything like that? Because, you know, I know some of those guys make nothing.
No, that's another thing I'm a little disappointed in, too. And I'm not stepping on any of the college coaches. But I just don't think that the college coaches are teaching these guys enough fundamentals. You watched the College World Series, right?
Yes, sir.
All the mistakes these teams were making, all these thrown to the wrong base, or getting picked off, or getting thrown out of third to end the inning, or trying to stretch a single into a double to start the game off. I mean, there's fundamentals of baseball, and the guys are going to college and going right into AAA or AA in 2 years later, they're in the big leagues, and they're not spending enough time on being fundamentally sound when they get to the big leagues. So, you know, that's what we're a part of right now. We can't do anything about it. But I would stress fundamentals, because I was lucky when I was a kid. I had good coaching, the same coaching that Don Zimmer had. And, you know, for all the last 30, 35 years, I've been going around the world saying there's one guy in the world that knows more about baseball than me, as far as I was concerned. It was Don Zimmer, okay? Since he's gone, now I'm the guy. I don't know who the next guy is going to be, but right now I'm the guy as far as I'm concerned. And it's just the way we were raised, guys. I mean, we were fundamentally sound when we were kids, and we just took that right into high school and right into the minor leagues. And, you know, back when I was in the minor leagues, guys, we really worked on fundamentals in the minor leagues. The Reds were real ticklish about fundamentals. And you didn't make the big leagues if you weren't fundamentally sound. And today there's a lot of guys that they come to the big leagues, they got talent, no question about it, but they don't know how to play. They don't know how to play the game. And I'll tell you, my son's a manager in Kannapolis for the White Sox. And what these teams do nowadays, guys, all they want to do is develop. They don't teach winning. I would think that's the most important thing you want to do to a young player is to teach him how to win. That should be the first priority. Because you have to understand you don't win if you don't play proper baseball. You know, so they just worry about developing these kids, bring them up here, send them back down here, send them up here. They don't worry about winning. You know, my son's team is 14 or 15-6 right now. He's in first place in the league he's in. Three teams are right underneath him. But, you know, I'd rather teach winning. Because I tell people all the time, if you go to watch your nephew or your niece or your son or your daughter play a sporting event and they win, you're in a better mood on the way home. There's no question about it. And if you're not in a better mood, you shouldn't be going to the game anyway. You know, if we lost the game when I was a kid, my dad wouldn't even stop to eat. He wouldn't even stop to eat. If we went into a slump as a team, it was like going to Jenny Craig. Are you guys listening to me? I'm trying to get a reaction. Come on, give me a reaction.
we're laughing off the mic.
We're a little bit away from the mic there, Pete, but I mean, I think I speak for everybody here. I mean, we agreed with just about everything you said there. I mean, it's true with the kind of the way the game's heading and stuff like that now. But we really do appreciate your time. It's an honor for Mike and I. I know our listeners are thrilled to listen to you. You can check Pete out at Mandalay Place in Las Vegas, PeteRose.com. It's the great Pete Rose. Pete, we appreciate it, man. Thank you very much.
Hey, anytime, guys. It's always a pleasure talking to guys that know what the hell they're talking about. Thank you.
And if you're back in the area, Pete, up in Bridgeport or anything like that, we'd love to have you back on in the studio, phone call, whatever you want to do for us, right?
All right. Thank you, man. Have a good day, guys.
Thank you. You too.
Okay.
That's the great Pete Rose, and before we get into our debate, which probably is not going to be anywhere near as exciting as talking to Pete Rose, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and I'm praying for Ragnarok Rising.
Boom. Is anyone out there?
Speak to the folks.
This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters, we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. Is anyone out there?
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
Are you as excited as I am? We talk about every time we have really great guests on, whether it was Tommy John, Ernie Banks, Jerry Rice, Thurman Thomas. We're name dropping.
Yeah.
Boom. That was awesome.
That was, you know why that was awesome?
Because it's Pete Rose?
Because the guy doesn't give a lot of interviews.
Yeah.
And we always talk about it. Honestly, I don't get nervous. People don't believe it. Like, I don't ever get nervous because I'm like, what's the worst that could happen? But you are a little nervous because it's not like you can go listen to other interviews he's given and really get a sense of. But, you know, immediately, I mean, he yelled at me.
Yeah,
calling him a single.
You got scolded.
But then I felt like, you know, I'm just like talking to, you know, we like to bust balls here. I felt like I'm talking to Dan Santarella.
Yeah.
I mean, you had 1,000 X-ray hits. You had over 3,000 singles. That's a lot of singles.
Yeah, you know, I saw that the other day, and it was, I believe it's he and Ty Cobb with 3,000 singles.
Yeah.
That's
a lot of singles.
Stupid stats.
Yeah.
Those are stupid.
But he, you know, I wanted, you know, we talked about how we were going to approach it and how much we want to talk about the band and everything. But to me, as a baseball fan and a baseball geek, just listening to him talk about baseball and the fact that he agreed with so much of the stuff that we say on the show was pretty great. But let's go out to the Hoboken studio. Because I almost felt like Pete liked it so much, he was like auditioning for Neil Lynch's job. Neil hasn't been here in a couple weeks. Maybe he thought there was an opening for Third Mike.
I think there is.
And so all of a sudden, the Hoboken studio lights up, and here's Neil Lynch calling in to win back your job. I mean, would you feel bad if we replace you with Pete Rose, Neil?
Not at all. I mean, tremendous upgrade all around. I don't even know how to follow that.
What would you have asked, Neil? Did we miss anything? I mean, did it sound good listening to it? Because I was, like, so on, like, cloud nine listening to Pete Rose just talk about hitting and baseball and all the rest. What would you have asked? You would have probably gotten silly.
Oh, I would have got a little silly, but I would have asked if there was the two-part question. One, is there any pitcher that he faced that he looked forward to mashing against? Is there anyone that, he steps in the box and he owns them? On the flip side of things, is there a pitcher that he just didn't want to step in against? I imagine the answer is no one, but knowing, his mentality. And then the other question is, if there's a catcher in today's game, one of today's catchers, that he could line up on home plate and pull over like he did Fossey in the All-Star game, who would it be?
Yeah, I mean, I did think about asking him about pitchers he hit, pitchers he didn't hit. The Fossey thing, Mike and I talked about a little bit off air. I didn't want to, ruffle his feathers or anything. I still am not a big fan of that play. As much as I love guys playing hard,
Would size up your boy Wrecker.
He might leave in a body bag if he sized up Wrecker. But I did think about the Fossey thing, but I figured it was better to let that go. I mean, I don't know how proud Pete is of that play. I mean, if you had to take a guess, do you think he's thrilled with that?
He said that really, like, I guess Fossey kind of moved into his way. Like, it wasn't his intention 3/4 of the way down the base pass to drill him. But once he got into that position, he's like, my weight was all going forward. There's no place I can go.
Yeah, you want to know something interesting?
I don't know.
I'll get you guys' opinions on it. The idea that the game maybe hasn't changed, some people think it hasn't changed that much. I know they've put in the rules now that you can't run over catchers, they got to have the ball, whatever. 3 years ago, I mean, we all saw the Scott Cousins, Buster Posey play. If a guy ran over Yadier Molina in an All-Star game like that, that is how the game has changed. Because right there, back in those days, people thought, that's Pete being Pete.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I mean, if you had Adam Eaton run over Yadier Molina,
I think he would get booed at the game.
I don't think there's any question.
I think it would be,
yeah.
And of course, ESPN would bash him and all the rest. But I think he would probably get booed at the game.
I agree 100%. And
unless it was that home team guy, like if the game was being played in, the Bronx and Derek Jeter, whatever. But if it was not like a hometown guy, the guy would get booed, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's playing hard, which, we've covered. I know you're a fan of it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm overboard
fan of
about it.
Of course, I preferred play hard, yeah.
But there's playing hard, and then there's a little bit dirty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the kind of stuff that I'm not a fan of. But
yeah.
I am a huge fan of Pete Rose, and I talk about it a lot. I mean, my dad's, my uncles used to talk about him. Like, this guy would hit balls so hard, such line drives, you couldn't believe it. And we fancy ourselves pretty decent players, and they're just talking to a guy who has 4,000 hits in the big leagues. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Like, when a guy in the big leagues right now gets to 2,000 hits, it's a big deal.
It's a huge – I mean
– he did that twice, and then just, like, I'll keep going.
Beltre just got to 2,500, which is –
Balloon came down.
And that's it's exceptionally impressive, I mean, for, like, a third baseman. Those are power positions, and you figure the guy's going to hit a ton of homers, which, Beltre obviously hits a lot of homers, but – I mean, not for anything. I was looking up Kenny Singleton, Yankees announcer stats the other day, and you don't realize in our age group just how good he was. I mean, you're talking 2,000 hits, I mean, right around 300 homers, 800, 900 RBIs. I mean, that's impressive. And then we've talked to a 4,000-hit guy, a 500 home run clubber in Ernie. We've talked to Tommy John with 280-plus wins. That's so impressive to me at that level because of how hard it has to be to play there.
Yeah.
Just these guys just make it look
we might not see another 280-game winner ever.
And the way things are going.
I mean, I thought CeCe might be a guy who can get there because he was over 200 going into the season. But
what about Dan Straley?
Well, Danny Straley is good. I told you. What did I tell you? How many wins is he going to have for
100.
I said he will be 100.
Write it in ink.
I said write it in ink. Well, that's a great segue. That's why you're the big fellow over here. Who gives it we call him the big segue guy. Neil, you were not privy to this because I thought you said you were going to be out this week. So Dan and I kind of talked about what we wanted to debate. And our debate is going to be, and I'm just going to drop it on you, because I know you have that kind of knowledge in between your ears. If you had to put money on which team would win a World Series first, and you can't take the no line, neither team will ever win a World Series, but which team is going to win a World Series first, the Chicago Cubs or the New York Metropolitans? I'm going to let you start it off, Neil, because I know where Danny's going. I know where I'm going. I'm very curious. Dan is hell-bent that you're definitely taking the Mets, but I think you're Mr. Negative. So who are you taking and why?
I mean, as down and as negative as I am on the Metropolitans, I got to go with the Mets. And there are a bevy of reasons why. They have the arms. You know, I mean, you look at Jacob deGrom, what he's done. They threw a stat out there that really blew my mind. He's the third Mets player in franchise history to have 11 strikeouts in a game. In his first 11 starts, the other two are Nolan Ryan and Dwight Gooden. You're going to get Harvey back next year. You know, Wheeler's turning the corner a little bit. Nice is a pretty solid guy. And you have G. And, you know, even with that, you know, Dice K is pitching out of his mind, way above what anyone expected from him. But you have Colon, who is inconsistent, but it could be a nice trading chip. This is why it sucks to be a Mets fan, because they give you a little glimpse of hope, and you take that little glimpse of hope, and then you blow it out of proportion. You say, well, this is the team, but that's not the team. That's the team on a high, and they're going to come down, and there's going to be a low. But with that said, they have some decent talent in the starting rotation. They do not have talent in the bullpen, and they need one or two bats to really make a push for the division title and for a World Series trip. Now the Cubs, I don't understand the Cubs at all. I mean, I really am just flabbergasted at how such a staple of not just Major League Baseball but of America. When I think of America, I think of the Chicago Cubs. I mean, this team has been around forever, and they have so much tradition and so much to love about the franchise as a whole that how could you just mail it in every year? Honestly, I mean, I don't see any hope for the Chicago Cubs, and it's ridiculous. I mean, if I'm the GM, how am I not just laying it on thick, just the history and the pride that comes with this organization and the fact that, you know, it's beloved. Why not come and be a part of that and return it to the glory days? And to not be able to pull that together is frustrating. And if I'm a Cubs fan, I don't know how you're not livid. I mean, I'm a Mets fan, and we're like the JV squad in New York. We're expected to lose, and I'm still pissed off. But you're a Chicago Cubs fan. You're going to sit there, and you're going to take that year, and you're out.
Well, before Dan's head explodes right next to me, because I'm going to go into the Cubs do have pieces. And if you want to just talk about straight pieces, I think the Cubs have more. But I want to go back to your Mets point quickly. If the Mets are going to win a World Series in this, like, era here of this guy, in this, say, the David Wright era, how many pieces of that World Series team are on the current roster? I mean, there's talk of trading Daniel Murphy, which to me is insane. Because it's going to cost too much. If you can't afford Daniel Murphy, then this is a moot point anyway because you're not going to win. I mean, Daniel Murphy's not going to be a $200 million guy, let's be honest. He's going to command some money. But so how many pieces? How many pieces are on the current roster? You mentioned some of the pitchers, but of the offensive players, is Duda a piece? Is Darno a piece? Is Lagares a piece? I mean, how many of the guys do you see being guys that could be a part of a World Series team on the current roster?
Well, and that's where, you know, there are a lot of question marks. Because, like, Lagares, can he stay healthy and be consistent? Is this the real Darno that we're seeing, or is this just a mirage? you know, I think, you know, Granderson has finally stepped it up and he's performing at an incredible rate. So is this the real Granderson that we're going to get over the next season or two? You know, Duda seems to feel like he's – I feel like he's embraced the starting position and he's really hitting at a tremendous clip. So if this is – if these are the real parts, if Duda's real, if Murphy's real, if Wright is can just stay frickin' healthy, you know, if Darnell is really hitting – can hit like this all the time, you know, if this team I'm watching right now playing the Braves – is the team that this is the best, most energetic I've seen the Mets all season. I mean, I don't know if it was Granderson or who did it, but they pulled something in that dugout and said, listen, we have the talent. We just got to go out and lay some wood down. So, I mean, but that's, again, there's too many question marks. They honestly, here's what happened. I was watching the Mets-Braves game the other day. They go down 3-2 on a just horrific horrific collapse. And so I decided to look back at the glory days, the 86 Mets, the 88 Mets. And these teams had a solid starting rotation. There were some seasons where they almost had 3 20-game winners, which is unheard of nowadays. But they had two run producers. It's usually Darryl and either McReynolds or someone else who were guaranteed 100-plus RBIs, 30-plus home runs. They had a guy who could steal bases, and they had an average guy who could get on base and get rallies going. And I feel like they're just so close to having that right now.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not – I don't disagree with you. I think, you know, when you talk about the piece that are going to be there, Granderson's going to be there because of his contract no matter what. So I think he's going to be a piece. Wright, Murphy, Duda. I mean, Duda is going to be cheap for the next couple of years, and if he can be a guy and give you 25 home runs, plays a little bit better defense than I think people thought, he could be a piece. Lagares still, to me, is a little up in the air. Defensively, we know he's there. But let's – Neil, hold on 1 second, because we've got a couple callers waiting on hold patiently. Hopefully they want to agree with you, Neil. We're going to go out to line number 2 down in Florida. Who's on with us?
My name is Lanny Poffo.
Hey, what's going on, Mr. Lanny Poffo? How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm the genius full of glory and renown, still living in the past.
You are my favorite guest we've had on. So to have you come in right now is just, honest to God, I mean, we had Pete Rose on to begin the show. To have you on just puts the cherry on the cake. So, Mr. Genius, so what are you up to nowadays? I mean, I know you got your poems out there and then all the rest. What do you got going on?
Well, on Saturday, I'm going to go bowling for breast cancer. I don't know how that's going to help, but I was invited. You know, they're going to people are going to pay to bowl with me, and then they're going to, you know, raise money that way. I'm going to Orlando. And just now I was watching the Cubs against the Reds. And if you don't mind, may I do my favorite poem that I wrote for Ted Williams?
100%. Let's hear it.
Okay. I actually made him cry, and I wasn't standing on his feet. It goes, through all of the magnificence that is Joe Robbie Stadium, the Marlins and the Dolphins' happy home, it gives me pride to introduce a man who was to baseball what Romulus and Remus were to Rome. Take 95 until you hit the Massachusetts Turnpike. Get off at Fenway Park, and there you are. We're back in 1941, this man hit 406. And even now, Ted Williams has no par. America anticipated every turn at bat to watch him knock the ball to smithereens. 521 home runs are even more incredible because he gave 5 years to the Marines. The boys who wrote the sports page never did him any favors, but for Cooperstown, they had to tell the truth. That Theodore Samuel Williams brought a splendor to the game, reminiscent of the late George Herman Ruth. Thank you.
I mean, genius, that is perfect. That's a perfect poem. And you read this to Ted Williams himself?
That's right. And he started crying, and he hugged me, and he said, if I'd have had you for a press agent, I'd have never had any problems. And then we were on the same plane from Miami to Tampa, and in those days, we didn't have cell phones. So I got on a payphone, and I told my father to be there, and Ted would agree to meet him because he had checked luggage in. And my only regret is I don't have a photograph of my father meeting Ted Williams, because my father died in 2010. Ted Williams died in 2002, and they exist now only in my memory. I just wish I had a picture, because meeting him myself was one thing, but introducing him to my father was even sweeter.
You know what? As I'm doing this show, I always think about that when I think about my father. Thank God he's still around. He listens every week. And I think about when you talk to, like, you know, we talked to Pete Rose or Ernie Banks. I mean, I would love to be in that situation that you were in to introduce my father to some of these guys. So it's an amazing moment. And it's a moment a lot of people don't know. I mean, knowing you and your brother's history, I mean, you guys are big-time baseball fans. Your brother played some minor league ball, I believe, right? With the Reds, was it?
Yes, he was signed in 1971 by the St. Louis Cardinals. He also played with the Cincinnati Reds organization and the Chicago White Sox. He never got above A-ball, but many are called and few are chosen.
Yeah, well, I mean, exactly. You just get that call further than I made. So we're having a debate now. Yes, you're a Cincinnati Reds fan, though, correct?
Yes, I am.
So I want you to be the definitive answer here, because I'm a Met fan. My co-host Danny here is a Cubbies fan, and we're debating who's going to win a World Series first, the Cubbies or the Mets. As a Cincinnati Reds fan, I got to imagine you're not a big fan of the Cubbies. But based on what you know now, who's going to win a World Series first between those two teams?
I believe the Mets will win first.
Let me
explain something to you. I'm from Downers Grove, Illinois. And I was a Cub fan my whole life, and my father was a Cub fan for his whole life. And then when my father died, we went to Downers Grove, Illinois, and for the funeral. And Randy says, I won't say what he said, but I'll clean it up a little for you guys. From now on, to hell with the Cubs. Dad rooted for them all his life, and they couldn't win. So screw them now. You know, he says, no more rooting for the Cubs, because anybody can have a bad century, but, you know, that breaks a lot of hearts, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
so
absolutely.
I just feel that the Mets will win first.
Well, we're in agreement on that, and I know Neil over in the Hoboken studio agrees with you. Now, what about this video folks could vote on? What's that all about?
It's no longer applicable. So the voting
okay.
is over on July the 1st, so thank you for asking. But now they're going to announce the winner pretty soon, and, of course, that's the subjective part. There's objective and subjective, and... Anyway, thank you for your support. I appreciate the offer, but it's a moot point now. And you know something? I really feel that Pete Rose needs to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm very angry. They've had killers go free, and yet they can't forgive this guy for betting. You know, it's just ridiculous. He was just a phenomenal he was worth the ticket price. He really played to win. He made such an impact. He kept himself in shape for 22 seasons at major league level. This guy is, you know, it's okay. We get it. He bet on baseball, but please put him in the Hall of Fame before. Anyway, that's just my feelings.
Well, I agree with you, and we said it when we had him on, and it's a shame that now his name is now going to be linked to these PED guys, because every time somebody talks about Barry Bonds not getting in or Mark McGwire, they bring up Pete Rose, and he's being linked to guys that, you know, actual cheaters, when all he was doing was betting on his own team. And it's even more of a shame, if that's even possible, the fact that he's not in, but then now he's being linked to guys he has no connection with. It is a shame.
Well, baseball is a bunch of hypocrites, because it was after the 1994 strike that baseball became dead. And it was Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire that, chicks dig the long ball. You know, when they started hitting all those home runs with their puffed-up bodies, they started drawing money. People started paying to see baseball again. And people, they turned a blind eye to it. I knew they were, of course they were on juice. You know, I took steroids in 1989. I'm not proud of it. The only reason I admit it is because I don't want to sound like Rafael Palmeiro and say I did not take steroids. You know, I was leaping Lanny, and then they make me the genius, and I knew this was my big chance. I was tired of being a jabroni. And then after I defeated Hulk Hogan on NBC, I went in the shower, and my testicles had shrunk to the size of razors, and I decided it might be a good idea to take that needle out. And then within a month, my muscles had deflated like a balloon after the party.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
I do know that steroids work, and if you can make contact, it'll go further.
Oh, yeah, and it helps your recovery time and all the rest. Now, me and my co-host disagree with that, too. I mean, I think clearly baseball's to blame. They turned the blind eye to it. If anything, they almost encouraged it by every – like the promotions like you're talking about, Chicks Dig the Long Ball. Everybody knew – anybody in the game knew Mark McGwire was doing steroids and all the rest. So they turned the blind eye, and then now they want to be – you know, wave their finger like they, you know, are washing their hands clean of it, which is a shame. But, Lanny, I do appreciate you calling in. I'd love to hear from you anytime. You know, we could do anything for you. You will be more than welcome to. I wish we could add you on to promote the video before it expired. I apologize for that. But best of luck to you.
Fine.
One of my favorites.
Thank you, guys. You have a beautiful night.
All right. Thank you very much. That's the great. It's the genius, Lanny Poffo, Dan. This is the first time you've got to talk to him because the other couple times he's called in, it was prior to the Dan Santarella era. But you know, I'm glad you were here for that because I love Lanny Poffo. I could talk to him every day of the week.
That was great.
Yeah, very good, and he does his poems. And he had one ready for us and everything. But we got another one of my favorite callers calling in, and then that's a guy who over the last week has had a rough week, and I know people have been blowing him up on Twitter, and that's the great Bobo from New York. Bobo, you with us?
Yep, I'm with you guys. First of all, I have to say, yeah, it's a bit of a travesty what happened to Anthony. Poor guy didn't say anything racist on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, but the bottom line is, even if you found those things racist, he says far worse things on his show, and Sirius was completely fine taking money in from the money they're making off his show when he's saying it on the air. It was just so hypocritical. Have you talked to Ant or Ope or Colin or any of the guys?
Well, I was at the compound last
weekend.
Oh,
on the 4th, yeah, on the 5th, yeah.
And I can tell you, Anthony seemed to be in good spirits, and he says there's big plans. He's trying to get his life on a compound show in early August, but he's not sure how realistic that deadline is to get it up and running. And I don't know anything else about Opie and Jimmy. I just know they still got to do the rest of their contract. But
yeah,
according to some sources, it seems like that it might be, rumor has that there's a strong possibility they're not going to re-up their contract once it's up, and they're going to get back together with Anthony and go to podcast route, which I'd be so happy with.
Believe me, I would be happy, too, to have them all reunited. I think they'd be great, and they can make a ton of money because if we're all paying $5 a month or whatever, and they get a couple hundred thousand, you know, followers, they're going to make more money doing what they're doing. But what I feel bad for is, like, what's going to happen to Travis and E-Rock and all those guys and Mars? Like, they're going to be still employed. You know, what's going to happen to them? Are they going to just get dispersed out to other stations if that happens?
Well, I think maybe ONA would make them part of their podcast staff.
Not
Mars,
South.
I know.
South.
Yeah, I know. I know Mars. He's employed of SiriusXM. He isn't just their engineer. He does. He's like one of the main engineers at SiriusXM Mars.
Yeah. So he's going to probably stick around and get stuck doing working with Mashup Nicole or whatever, and it'll be horrible for him.
Yeah, and I know Sam. The thing is, I'm not sure he could. It could go either way with Sam. I would assume that Sam's going to go with ONA, but you got to remember Sam also does stuff for Raw Dog.
Yeah, I mean, Sam probably – I mean, it would be a shame for Sam because his career is clearly going up, and it would be a shame for him to lose out on that. Now, but what was the mood there at the party at the compound? Was it – I mean, what was the mood? Was it, it's got to be a little bit somber, no?
It was a little bit somber, but at the same time it was celebratory because Anthony was in good spirits. He was discussing, like, I heard him discussing with I think him and Drew Boogie, I can't say anything specifically he hasn't made public yet, but I heard them saying, like, they were going back and forth with some ideas. And Anthony seemed to be someone in the joking mood. And he said during his life in the compound, however long he'll have to be without Opie and Jimmy, he says it's gonna feel weird doing it without Opie and Jimmy there and without Chip.
Yeah, I guess, God, it's going to be bizarre. I mean, he's always had somebody. I mean, I know even when he was doing Life in the Compound, he had, you know, Melissa Stetton with him or somebody. And to do it for his full-time gig, it's going to be a little bit weird. But, you know, we're going to listen. Everybody's going to listen because we love Anthony. And you know, I kind of got a little frustrated by people that are, like, bashing Jimmy and Ope for honoring their contract. But that's just, look, this is their job. I mean, what are they going to do? This idea that they could just pick up and leave, it's kind of silly. So, you know, they got to do what they got to do for the next couple of months. I hope that they actually discuss it on Monday. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's actually going to be must-listen radio, obviously, on Monday.
Yep, that's for sure. I think they're still doing their contract because there's probably a threat of lawsuits if they leave before the end of their contract. That's what I think is happening with them.
Yeah, I mean, the contract's up in October. Well, you know, we'll see. I haven't canceled my subscription yet, mostly because I love Ronnie and Fez and because I can't wait to listen on Monday. And I don't know all those, you know, people tweet out those little places you could listen to, Audible or whatever.com. I don't know how that works. I know that I can go to my phone and listen to them at work when I'm on my phone, so that's what I'll do. And, you know, if they don't re-up in October, we'll take it from there. But let's talk about the Mets, Bobo. What are you feeling about the Mets? I mean, every time you feel like they're down and out and they're about to go in the tank, they give you a little bit of life. I mean, are you excited at all about the Mets this year? Is there anything that you're seeing that you're loving or what?
Yeah, I think there could be a big second half run in there. There could be a big second half run there with Murphy, and I think maybe Wright starting to pick it up a bit more. Granderson starting to finally, I felt he was getting adjusted to playing with the Mets, I think.
Yeah, the big home run. Was it last night or two nights ago? He had a big home run there in the ninth. He's picking it up. I mean, this guy, by the end of the year, he's going to have 25 home runs, 85 RBIs, which is exactly what you signed him for. I just don't understand this push that they're going to have to trade Daniel Murphy. That would be just, I mean, he's their most consistent pure hitter on the team, even including Wright, because Wright's so streaky.
Yeah.
How are they getting rid of him? And the idea that because he's going to be a free agent next year, they can't afford him, then what the hell are we even talking about? Can't afford Daniel Murphy.
I think they're going to keep him. And I also, speaking of Mets, speaking of baseball, I got a big announcement. July 25th, I'm throwing the first pitch at the Brooklyn Cyclones game Friday
night. Is that right?
July 25th.
How did you get that?
I know some people, but I received word when I was at the game.
Oh, my God. We got to get down there, Dan. I got to see that. That's amazing. Yeah, congratulations, brother. That's a good time. Now, let me ask you this. Are you going to be one of those guys that stands in front of the mound, or are you going to throw it all the way from the mound is the question?
Well, if they let me, I'll throw it on the mound.
That's what you want to do. You don't want to be one of those guys that throws it from the front of the circle. You got to get back. I want to see the Bobo fastball from the rubber.
Yep. I know I've been practicing in my backyard. Thanks to me and my sister have been practicing the backyard for this moment. And not only that, if you want to get, if I can get like 20 people, I could get a group discount. You could send me the money, like whoever you're going with. Hey, you guys can send me the money, and I'll get. And if it's 20 people decide to go because of me, I can get you guys in on the group discount.
What day of the week is the 25th? I don't have a calendar in front of me.
The 25th is on a Friday. It's at night. Oh yeah, and also I said if I can get 20 people together for this group discount, you guys get free hats.
Well, nice. Well, let's put it together, Dan. There's no reason we're not putting that together. July 25th, Bubba. We got your number all, and I can DM you on Twitter. We're gonna put that together. We're gonna have a Tri-State Sports Guys contingency. We're gonna get a block of 20 tickets. It'll go down. I've never been to Cyclone Stadium down there in Brooklyn, I hear it's a good time.
Yeah, it is. It's a great time. It's some great food. And plus, you got Nathan's not far from there. And maybe we could all – maybe if you get there early enough before the game, we could all do a group ride on the Cyclone together.
I mean, I'm down. I haven't been on the Cyclone since I'm a little kid. I would love to do that.
Yeah, definitely. I actually went on that ride as soon as I was tall enough to go on it.
There you go. So you're tall enough. So, but so yeah, we'll get. I mean, with 20 people and Bobo and his people, we'll have the whole coaster. We'll do the whole thing. We'll take a nice picture. It'll be beautiful.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Just let me know if you guys get 20 people. You DM me and I guess you could send I think maybe $20 would cover $20 each would cover the cost for each of the tickets that I would get for what I call the Bobo 20.
The Bobo 20, $400 out the door. I like it. All right, Bobo, we're gonna take care. I'm gonna start working on it tonight. I'm gonna let you know by the end of this week if we can get it. I'm sure we can. If not, we'll cover the rest of it and we'll just get some people. We'll give some tickets away. So I appreciate that, Bobo, and good luck with that, dude. We'll be in touch. All right, pal.
All right, no problem. You guys have a great night. And the Mets are still winning, I believe, right now. So hopefully, good luck to Dillagene getting this win.
Yeah, that's right. Get him in the 95 pitches and get him out of there. All right, thanks, Bobo. Be good, brother. Stand with Anthony, right?
All right.
All right, there you go. It's Bobo from the – and this guy was at the – I mean, he's – so they had the – he – Ant has his big party after the 4th of July. I know you're not a huge Open Anthony guy, Danny, but you like him, right? I mean, you're not like an Ant
guy.
No,
I do like them.
So Bobo was at the party. How – I mean, days after Ant gets fired. Ant gets fired at the end of the day on the 3rd. And the party was canceled. I believe it was on the 5th because of the weather on the 4th. And Bobo's there, just hanging out with Anthony. The most talked about guy in the media right now. I mean, he's on everything. CNN.
It's just another Saturday for Bobo.
He's just hanging out there. And I still have the first pitch of the goddamn Cyclone game.
Yeah.
We got to get there.
I would love to go.
We got to go. I've always been saying I want to go down to a Cyclone game anyway. I'll get my brother. Maybe my nephew will come down. We'll get a bunch of people.
The fact that he said the Cyclone game was cool, and then when he reminded me that Nathan's is around the corner. How do I not get
my father's actually going to be in town for that?
I'll crush Nathan.
Oh, I'll just crush a half dozen of them.
Yeah, let's do it.
$20. All right, we're going to make that happen. I got my we're going to make that. I want to get the wheels. If you're listening now and you're interested, email us at tricitysportsguys@gmail.com or send us a message on Facebook or whatever you're interested, because we're going to get a 20 block of tickets and we're going to go. That's going to be a good time. All right, so Neil, back to our argument, buddy. We had Lanny Poffo, we had Bobo, but now we're back to this discussion, because we're close to hearing Danny's rebuttal here about why you hate the Cubs, but you're not at all excited, Neil, about what they're doing with guys like, I mean, Castro's on fire, and this idea they have to trade him, he signed through like 2020 or something. He signed that long to
2019, club option for 2020.
Okay, so he signed through 2019, right? I honestly think Dan Straley is a decent piece. But then you also got all the guys in the minors with Chris Bryant, Javier Baez, and your Alcantara, who they used to just got called up today. Anthony Rizzo is a legitimate power bat at first base. Wellington Castillo is a nice piece. None of those guys excite you at all, Neil?
As trade bait, yeah, they excite me a lot.
See, what I don't understand is, you have Soler, you had him.
Oh, yeah, you had Jorge Soler, who's now
They added Billy McKinney, who's Oakland's, I think, number two outfield prospect. He's like 19.
It was
so,
like a throw-in in this
game.
Nobody talks about it.
You know, you don't even know what you'll get out of him, but from what I understand, he's a left-handed bat who's got some speed.
Junior Lake.
Junior Lake is a guy
like... Can
we
give up on Mike Alt, though?
I'm not giving up on Mike Alt in terms of him being a power-type bat. I mean, I refuse to, especially at Wrigley. And the other thing about it is, for the very same reasons you're talking about the Mets saying that they're going to have to deal Murphy, you know, we've talked about Murphy in the past, and I'm a huge fan of his. All he does is hit line drives, and, you know, he's not a gold glove winning second baseman, but he's solid enough where he's not killing
you.
He's
not a mess at second base.
No, he's not a mess. And that speaks to the mess that is the Mets at times, that they feel this need now, this knee-jerk reaction to trade him. Should make the argument for the Cubs even stronger, because I don't think the Cubs would deal a guy like him. I mean, I don't see that. Like, a guy that you're talking about, he's not going to command $22 million a year. He's homegrown.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't you keep that guy? I mean, it seems like the only guy who's untouchable all these years has been Wright, and now you obviously have a guy like Harvey and, you know, Wheeler, Syndergaard, all these guys they talk about. And the other thing with the Cubbies is Wrigley Field has got to be a lot more alluring to both sides of the plate, pitchers and hitters. Because while it can be a clear-cut hitter's park, you get the wind blowing in 25 miles an hour, and a guy like David Price could put up like a 2 ERA in that place. So winning there, that's what Schilling did when he wanted to go to the Red Sox. They'd never won. They had won since 1918. He couldn't wait to get there. Who can't wait to get to the Mets? I mean, if you're a pitcher, you'd love to throw there.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But the Jason Bay experiment and what you saw with Granderson in April, although he's turning it around, obviously – I mean, what hitters are you going to get there on the free agent market unless you can swing trades and bring guys in? I mean, the Cubs can get bats. The Cubs have ample pieces now to make trades. They have, as Neil just said, they could get rid of minor leaguers and not Castro. You could re-unload Addison Russell somewhere.
Well, that
pick yourself up an arm, but, I mean, they have options. And we talked about it off air. I'm not saying the Mets – and we both agree, like, we're not saying we're ironclad that it's going to be the Mets or it's going to be the Cubs, but I just see the Cubs having a little bit more wiggle room with what they can do now. And then to end the day, you look at Epstein and Hoyer, give me a lot more confidence, and we were both getting into Sandy Alderson last week. They give me a lot more confidence that they know what they're doing than where the Mets are heading. And that's not to say that I don't like some of the parts the Mets have. I'm just saying, with the trade now, getting rid of Samardzija and Hamill and picking up three good prospects and then a player to be named later, I mean, they're going in the right direction, and they're going to have a boatload of money with the Ricketts family to unload in free agency the next couple of years. And I talked to you about David Price. Maybe they make a run some other guys, do some things,
Price,
put together a pitching staff.
I think Price is the guy, and I do think – now, Neil, I do think that they're going to peel off one of those shortstop prospects for a pitcher. To me, I mean, Castro – doing what he's doing now in the middle of the order, although he's not a typical middle-of-the-order guy, but he's showing some pop this year. He's so controllable. He signed through 2019. He's making like $8 million a year, which is insane. He already signed like an eight-year, $60 million deal or something.
Yeah, I mean, he gets up into, I think, like 14, 15 the last year, and then it's the club options like 16 and a half. The question you have there is, and I honestly, you know, in Theo we trust, so I'm fine with whatever he decides to do. Do you deal Castro for a more front-end starter now, or do you deal Russell, Baez, Alcantara, somebody like that to make a move for a pitcher? But the point is he has options now in the front office, more so than what I see with Alderson. And then I come back to the point about Murphy. Like, if you're not going to re-sign Murphy.
Well, that's what I mean. What are we talking about?
I mean, I can't
imagine they're going to trade. I think that's coming from the fan base and coming from the media, like, that just likes to talk. Now, Neil, out of the guys, I don't know how much you follow minor leaguers, but Javier Baez is a top five prospect on any list, that hitting wise. I mean, he dropped like 40 bombs last year, 37 bombs.
Yeah,
they have
three of the top seven prospects in baseball.
Yeah, so but I think that Javier Baez actually carries more clout in a trade for an arm.
He's got
the ceiling. It's so unbelievable with that guy. I mean, he could be like Alex Rodriguez. So, Neil, if shortstop is a position that the Mets need, although Tata's got an on-base that's over 350 and he's playing very good defensive shortstop, he's not the joke that everybody makes him sound to be. But say we need a shortstop. Would you rather them go get the known quantity in Castro? And would you be willing to deal a guy like Syndergaard, which I would? Or would you rather go with a Javier Baez, who's got this limitless ceiling of a guy who could hit 40 home runs in the shortstop spot?
I mean, I go with the proven entity. I go and get Castro. I think that's definitely a game changer for the Mets. And if you have to sacrifice Syndergaard or another young arm, I am perfectly fine with that. Honestly, I think the Mets have, like I said, the Mets have the arms. But they are like one or two position players away from really making a push, and you know, a Castro would just be huge. I mean, his impact would be immeasurable. So that's why I think that the Mets are in a better position right now to win and to make a push. You know, probably not this year, but next year, than the Cubs are.
Well, here's the reason I'm gonna short and condense my argument for the Mets. And it's some of the reasons that Neil mentioned, that the pieces that are in place now that are major league ready, I think, are more plentiful for the Mets than the Cubs. And the fact they have Harvey, I think Wheeler, although he's still inconsistent and can't hit, Harvey's problem is that he can't put guys away. Although his strikeout numbers aren't bad, he throws so many pitches, even though he's not wild, through five, six innings, he can't get deep into games. But I think Harvey can wind up being one of those guys. And then you have Nice, who you're going to need a lefty, and he's very controllable. He's like 5 years, $30 million, something like that. You got Dylan G. You got DeGrom, DeGrom is the one reason that makes me want to think they could trade Syndergaard for a piece. And then you've got Wright, Murphy, Granderson, and then you figure out, you know, adding a piece. And even Duda, if he could be a guy who could hit 260 with 25 home runs at an affordable price, he's Adam LaRoche, here you go. You're fine.
Here's the deal. The Mets suck in one-run games for a while now. One-run games. They've sucked. Can you imagine if they just turn that around a little bit? I mean, they are now, what, 8 games out of first, something like that. If those are 8 one-run games and they win half of them, they're in contention. So I honestly think it's a guy like a Jose Reyes. When the Mets were good, they had a Jose Reyes who would get on base, steal second, get to third, and make it easy to get a run.
Yeah.
A run. And it's a one or two run differential that's killing them in the one-run games. And if Castro is the guy that can get them that extra run, I mean, make the push for it now. I don't see why you wait and say, well, we'll have all these young arms. You don't know that. I mean,
exactly.
I lived through Generation K. That can be a lot of hogwash. So let's make the push for Castro or another bat now, because you already passed on Nelson Cruz, who's leading the frickin' league in home runs. And it just, like, that kind of strategery is just, like, nonsensical. So if you have something on the plate that it looks like the Cubs are stocking up for a trade at shortstop position, then make a push for it and figure it out. And if you have a financial situation that you don't think you have the pockets for, go to your team and say, hey, guys, we have an opportunity to get this guy. If we get this guy, we're going to win the division. We're going to win the championship. Can you restructure your contract? And I think that most teammates, if they buy into the organization and they like their chances, will do that.
Yeah, as long as the bottom line is the same. I think that Castro's a guy that the Mets can afford. I think if they give up this Syndergaard, which a lot of the Mets talking heads are saying that that's too much to give up for Castro. To me, that's insane. This guy's pitching to a 5 ERA. I know he's had back-to-back good starts down in the minors now, but he might not pitch in the major leagues at all this year. Get rid of that guy. I mean, we've seen DeGrom. I look at DeGrom, he looks like a pitcher. You know what I mean? I throw the numbers out. You just watch the guy pitch. He makes solid pitches. Keep him. Go out and get Castro. The reason that I'm putting the Mets, though, the deciding factor, is the division that they play in. Because I know that there's all this talk about the Nationals, and I just don't buy into the Nationals' offense. You know, they got guys that could hit the ball out of the yard, but I don't know that they have the pieces to really just put together a solid offense. And their pitching staff is great. But I don't know that they're, like, insurmountable. When you look at the NL Central and you look at, like, the young players that the Pirates have, you look at their outfield right now with McCutchen, Marte, Polanco, and you get these guys like that. You know, even Alvarez, who's a guy I'm not a huge fan of at third base but can hit the ball a mile. And you have these pieces and you start to say, well, they got some young good arms. They always have the decent bullpen. The Cardinals are always going to be good. They're always built. They have a young staff. I feel like the National League Central – it's such a harder division to just wrap your hands around, and they're always going to be one of those. They're always going to be in that fight where, like, are we a wild card? Are we a second wild card? Are we going to, you know what I mean? And that's going to be for. We're talking about this era, so we're talking about really the next 10 years. Can they win the NL Central? And if they do win it, I mean, I feel like to win a World Series, having not been there, you do have to get there a couple times. You just see that. There's not a lot of times when you get a team like the Rays that could just come to the play. They get to the playoffs and they're going to lose, and it takes a while. You get back, you get a little further. You get back, you get a little further. So not only do the Cubs have to make the playoffs, they have to then have success in the playoffs a couple of years before they're ready to make this leap to the World Series, and that's kind of the reason why I'm leaning towards the Mets, where I think that the NL East is a more manageable. I'm more worried about the Marlins, personally, 5 years from now than I am with the Nats. Now, Dan, give me your case for why we're wrong and the Cubbies are the team.
Well, the first thing is I understand your point. I've never bought into the idea that a team needs to get there multiple times. I believe in that in golf or tennis when it's an individual game or a sport or whatever. But that's not really the point. I mean, the first thing is Starlin Castro is a player that you really do have to watch every day to get the full breadth of how he plays the game. And that's, I mean, I've watched probably 120 Cub games a year for a long time now. And the first thing you see with Starlin is he's a head scratcher a lot of times. And this idea that, you know, if the Mets can get him for Noah Syndergaard or something along those lines, that's a huge game changer. I think if you did that move tomorrow, within the next year, I would probably hear from you and Neil at least 24 times something Castro did that annoyed you. Now, he puts up numbers, he hits for some pop, he's got good range at shortstop. He is impressive, but I think from a Cubs fan's perspective, if Epstein and Hoyer decide that that's a guy that they want to move in some kind of a deal, all that says to me is that Russell's progressing at AA the way they want him to, or Baez is progressing at AA or AAA or whatever it might be, how they want him to, because I don't think they'll get rid of Castro until they realize Baez or Russell or, you know, whoever else it might be is ready. In terms of the NL Central, I mean, the Cubs were there during the Pinella regime. They were there. I mean, you know, they never won a playoff game, I mean, in back-to-back years. So, I mean, you can get there. I understand the Central was different then. But I don't even put that much weight into how a division looks. I mean, it's a matter right now of the Cubs, what their lineup could look like in 2 or 3 years. And I'm not saying it's this argument, you know, they're not going to win the World Series next year. But in a year, 2, 3, parts will start coming up. They'll have a lot of money to spend if they want to move some money on a guy like Price or make a move for somebody else in the market. So you can make a pitch. It's, you know, you're going to need it to win. But I could just as easily see, you know, see the Mets make some moves and start putting something together. But I don't know. I don't have anywhere near the confidence in Alderson. We talked about him last week. That's what it comes down to for me. He's making moves. I believe in him. He's got the World Series pedigree. Hoyer seems to have some understanding of what's going on as well. So, I mean, that's where I would put all my eggs into that basket. I would put it into Theo's basket. I was not as confident a week and a half ago as I was after the Samardzija trade, and I found that very odd with myself. But the minute he made it, I said, okay.
You didn't want to trade.
I didn't want it. Now I see it as, you know, they could move Travis Wood. He's already talked about it. He talked about it 2 months ago. We'll move Samardzija, we'll move Wood. So one piece is gone, and then, you know, he throws Hamill in. He's got that. He could move. The Schwarber kid, who was just a first-round pick, and I know my, you know, top prospects, it's very fickle business to get into, but Schwarber's got a beautiful swing that I watched in the College World Series, in the regionals, and then the Cubs draft him, and then all he does is start raking in the minor leagues. So there's guys they have that if they want to move Wood, if they move Castillo, if they do this, that, they move Olt, they move Lake, whatever they do, I feel like Theo has a grand plan, and I'm not as sold on Alderson having that. That being said, 3 years from now, the Mets could be hoisting a World Series banner, and I would be thrilled for you guys.
Just back to back. Yeah, it would be.
That would be the I mean, that's
great
the thing.
For the show.
Neil wants to stand here, trash my Cubs.
I even imagine him in the Hoboken Studio standing up, like yelling at his phone over there.
Neil?
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when he's talking about the Cubs. I mean, he's got
he hates the Cubs.
Hatred. I don't get it. But I would be rooting for the Mets in a World Series against anyone. I'm going through real quick in the American League. I think it would be awesome. It'd be great for the city. It'd be great for you guys. But, yeah, I mean, I see the Cubs heading in the direction that I like now, and I never saw that coming through with Samardzija trade, but I think they're stockpiling, and
Neil,
Theo knows what he's doing.
Neil, did that sway you at all?
No.
Anything?
Of course not.
No. I mean, that's just delusional at its best. Like, I don't know. You know, obviously, I haven't watched a whole lot of Cubs games. I watched them play the Mets, and I just saw a Mets team that just blew a lot of chances. I didn't see, you know, when I look at a guy like Anthony Rizzo, I see a guy who, you know, puts up gaudy home run numbers, but, like, is that a guy that you can depend on in the clutch who is consistently driving in runs for you and that you can count on to be a run producer? I don't know. I mean, I see a guy that kind of might strike out a lot. So, I mean, to get rid of Hamill and Samardzija in one fell swoop, and I don't know much about who they got in return, but it just seems like they're in sell-off mode. And, you know, that you have, like, maybe one or two guys that you can look to that you can say you can maybe build around. So at this point in time, I feel like the Mets are in a better position. Now, who knows what happens a year from now or 2 years from now, but, I mean, I just know, looking at the Mets, that they have a lot of wasted talent, and they've blown a lot of opportunities. And I don't know that you can say the same for the Cubs. Are they getting outplayed night in, night out, or are they just making bonehead mistakes that cost them games, like the Mets?
Well, the Cubs aren't great right now, but to say that they're selling off when they get an elite shortstop prospect, a top outfield prospect, and a guy in Straley who won 10 games last year, and probably the only reason he's not in the rotation is because the rotation is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, if he was on 22 other teams in the big leagues, he'd be in the rotation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
Straley's the guy that people are drafting fantasy
to. So, I mean, to get him, to get that, I'm not saying I'm thrilled Samardzija's gone, but when you get a haul like that in return, and that's all baseball
is. Like you
said
off the air, they could get him back. Because the A's are not going to re-sign because he's going to get a $200 million.
Yeah, I mean, the difference is, I think, between most Cubs fans and the Mets fans I know is that we very rarely get irate about things.
No.
Mets fans seem to be, you know, maybe that's the New York thing around here, but I will be PO'd this offseason if there's not a push made for David
Price.
Yeah. That will upset me.
Who would you want, Price or Samardzija? Samardzija might be a little bit cheaper. They're both going to be 150 plus.
I'll tell you this one right now. If they ever got Price and Samardzija, I mean,
lights out. And Dan Straley?
It'd be like winning a World Series. Let's
go out to the Tucci Lumber Hotline. We got a couple people waiting patiently on hold. I got to get to this guy first, and I'm sure he's going to change the conversation over to Mr. One Masahiro Tanaka. But that's the great Nick from Norwalk. Nick, how are you, brother?
I was going to say it's about time to throw in the towel, and it's, you know, the demise of the Yankees has finally, you know, fallen in front of us, you know. It's kind of tough. I kind of saw it come in this season, just the way McCann doesn't hit and Beltran should be wrapped in a, you know, in bubble wrap, and you know, I kind of was just trying to push it down and down and say, no, everything's gonna be all right. But I mean, I'm looking at the next 3, 4, maybe even 5 years, and I don't see anything promising for the Yankees. You just can't. You can't be happy if you're a Yankee fan right now.
So what's the latest on Tanaka? I mean, I know he's going up north to get an MRI, but they've already put him on the 15-day, right?
It's precautionary, but apparently they know what the issue is. They just won't announce it till the team doctors officially look at it. So it's some people think it might be worse than it is. Other people think maybe it's okay. He just needs 2 weeks to rest. Either way, I mean, it just kills whatever. I mean, Francesa put it perfect this afternoon. He said, and there's never been recent history have the Yankees been so reliant on one guy, and they really have. They've been relying on just one Japanese pitcher this whole time, just every fifth day to come through, and now that he's out of it, I don't know what to say, really. I mean, I kind of saw it coming. If, you know, I started looking at that they've got those heat maps and those pitch FX tools over on from Brooks Baseball and stuff. And you can start looking at his last 4 starts, he was starting to fall off. And I was kind of scratching my head, maybe he's overworked, maybe throwing a lot of pitches. It turns out maybe his elbow, the different workload over here. The only thing I will say is this was the first time in back-to-back starts he's throwing on regular rest. So Girardi has been lucky to have worked the schedule where he's been able to give Tanaka that extra day so far up until now. But, I mean, you put all your eggs in one basket, what do you do?
I'll tell you what, Nick, the first thing about it is he's impressed the hell out of me. I mean, I think that goes without saying, but I never expected that. I mean, I've seen the documentary Bobby Valentine did when he was, you know, managing over there, and he said it's like a cross between AA and AAA ball over there. So to see him come over and do what he's done has been just unbelievable. But I think the other thing about the Yankees, which makes them different than just about anybody in baseball, maybe now with the exception of, you know, the Dodgers, and it's been the Red Sox for a while, but I never count them out. I see what you're saying, being the, you know, you're kind of hanging your head a little bit as a Yankee fan, but they'll always buy. They'll always get back into the market. I was talking to a couple guys last night who are Yankee fans, and I was telling them, you know, you're not going to see a massive rebuild with the Yankees because I really think they can get away with it. The Cubs can because their fans are patient, but I never see the Yankees as being 5 years down the line. I get your point. But they'll get in there. They'll make a push at Price. They'll make a push at Samardzija. They'll make a push at a million guys and do what they have to do.
Well, we've got to look at this season. Do the Yankees ever – do you think the Yankees, we will ever decide to be sellers? I mean, there's no trade right now that they could make that will improve this team if, let's say, Tanaka is shelved for a month or so. Nobody's going to want to trade for us, give us anything that, okay, you need another pitcher, okay, it's just going to cost you a little more. Oh, you need a right-handed bat, okay, here, it's going to cost you a little more. I mean, I've conceded this season. I'm conceding the next 2 or 3 seasons. Like, to me, McCann is just a waste.
Well, that's why I was there.
$85 million. I'd let Cervelli play every day. The guy seems to hit better.
Well, you don't think that there is a market out there for Brian McCann, even though he's been so bad.
Absolutely.
You don't think there's a? I think
absolutely.
I think there's a market. You could get. You can get out of that. I said the deal was awful when they signed him. I think you can get out of that. I think that there is a team that needs a veteran catcher. That could
the
get
two
that,
guys that I'm hearing that could get traded are going to be Robertson and maybe Gardner if they ever decide to be sellers. That's who they, you know, people need a closer. David Robertson is a top of the line closer. We can obviously we got Betances. He's got that knee buckling curveball that I was just watching him now. I mean, he's striking out guys left and right. And Gardner, you know, he signed that extension. He's a solid player. There's a team that's going to want a guy that's locked up for a few years that's going to hit 280, 300, you know. And he's showing some pop. I say why not be sellers and move on. I know that's not how Cashman's thinking, but
yeah, I just think that, like, to your point, there's not a lot of guys that have that are attractive to sell off because you're not going to sell off Beltran.
He's just killing me.
Yeah, and I was, you know, you're not a huge fan of that signing either. But the Gardner thing is, I think that Gardner's the guy you want to hang on to. I like the extension they gave him. I think that he's a guy that helps the Yankees defensively, offensively. I don't know that I want to sell him off because what are you going to get? You're still going to be then stuck with – you've got to try any way possible to get out from
but
under
I'm
these.
I'm looking at 3-4 years. It's just going to be 3-4 more years of this. What are we just going to keep buying, guys? I mean, like, now, for instance, Lester has told the Red Sox to table talks. He doesn't want to sign an extension. There's always been rumblings that he wants – that, he, you know, the Yankees are going to target him this year. Do we, you know, he's a gamer, but he's already in his – what, he's almost 30 years old? And assign him to a 7-year, $200 million contract?
Yeah, that's going to be the problem. But
Scherzer's great, but he's getting up – well, he's not that old. I think he's 28, but he's logging a lot of innings, and he told Detroit, too, table the talks. I'm going to hit – you know, he's going to command $200, $220 million.
Well, he left $140 on the table, I think, so he's going to want at least
$200. He shut down two or three offers, I believe, from Detroit because he wants to test free agency because he knows, you know, an idiot like Cashman is going to say, okay, well, you know, here's 6 years, 7 years, $250 million, and, you know, come pitch the rest of your career in pinstripes.
Yeah.
I'm always a fan of that, but it's now it's, you know, I'm starting to look at it realistically, and it's like, you know, I don't see anything good coming in the next 3 or 4 years. I mean, I to be honest, I enjoy watching the Mets right now more than I do the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, I can see your point there. I mean, I think the difference is it's kind of the Yankee fan mindset that, you know, that those are the deals pitchers get now. So you give that deal to Sabathia years back, and it yields a World Series. And that's, to a Cubs fan, I mean, that would be the greatest thing in the world. To sign David Price to a 7 or 8 year deal would be stupid. I understand that. I agree with you. But if it brought them one World Series, I mean, Cubs fans would say it's worth every penny of it. So you reap what you sow. I mean, you sign these guys to long-term deals. I do see, and I saw it about a week ago, said it to a buddy of mine, I see McCann turning the corner a little bit. You know, he started to hit in Minnesota. What do you have, 3 hits last night in Cleveland?
Yeah, he's hitting on the road, but he's got that block in his head at the scoreboards.
Yeah, no, but I mean, that's the thing, though. I mean, you look for little things. I mean, it's a veteran. You know, it's a position, as you know, you get banged up. But he does look like he's turning a corner. I mean, you know, you don't have a lot of parts like other teams do. But, you know, I wish I could tell you that we'd be rooting for you, but none of us here are Yankee fans, really.
No, nor should you be. There's a lot of promising teams like your Cubs. I mean, I think the Cubs came away great. I mean, you knew Samardzija wasn't going to re-sign, so. You guys got a good, you came off with a good haul there. You look at a team like the Astros. I mean, that's a team that's going to be up and coming in the next few years. I mean, they're already showing fight with that little, whatever payroll they got going. Kid Altuve's a gamer. I know you've said that, Dan. You've said you've liked the way he plays. I was watching him the other night. I mean, the guy is just a gamer. You see teams like that. I mean, and that's where the future of baseball is going. Is going to be, you know, probably going to be the Cubs and the Astros, and I'm still hesitant on the Mets going into your debate. I like I said, I don't trust Alderson. I don't trust his judgment. I mean, from what I've seen with him over the past few years, he just seems like he doesn't know what the hell he's doing. But
so, are you siding with me? You're going to take the Cubbies?
I definitely do. Theo has no problem opening up the checkbook. I mean, and you got to look at it this way. If you're looking at a big name free agent, where do you want to go? Do you want to go to Citi Field and play in the Mets where nobody's there? Do you want to go to Wrigley Field where they're at least, you know, they're selling out games and, you know, I mean, I think most guys would, you know, even though you're right, it's in a harder division, you got the Cards, you got all that, you know, got all that to deal with. But I would think that the Cubs have a brighter future. You saw that guy Arrieta pitch. What did he pitch? Eight innings of no hit against the Red Sox last week. Yeah. You got promise there.
No, I know. And look, Nick, we appreciate the call, man. We're going to get into a little bit of another discussion right now. Call us back next week, buddy. We always appreciate your insight, man. We'll be following your Yankees, buddy.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.
All right.
So we got one guy that agrees with me. Cubs. Likes the Cubs more than the Mets.
Loves the Cubbies. I had a tough time with the debate. Neil had no. It was like he heard that this was the debate we were going to have, and there wasn't even like the switch was like, well, it's the Mets.
You know how like you watch those old movies and they say there's going to be a fight at the flagpole, and, like don't bring any bats or anything like that. I would do that with Neil, but I'd bring brass knuckles.
just
try to see if I could sucker punch him. His hatred for the Cubs is so palpable. I don't get it. I don't know anyone outside of like Missouri who hates the Cubs anywhere near that much. But
in the 80s we had the big Cub Buster shirts. The Mets and Cubs used to be rivals.
I remember they were in the
80s. It was like a bright yellow Cub Buster shirt. I don't know why it was bright yellow. I used to rock it. Because
Mets fans are horrible
to
people.
School. Oh, yeah. I mean, fashion has never been the Mets' forte.
I mean, you guys come around in 62. All you do is win a pair of World Series. And people bitch around here. That's what I'm saying. I was just saying that to Neil. To Nick. The fact that the Yankees went and gave Sabathia all that money. I mean, we all know. I think we all agree. Giving pitchers $7, $8, $9 million
you're paying
a year
for the first four in the last.
But that's the thing. If you guys did it, the Mets fans, and you signed David Price, and he was he goes like 3-0 in a World Series for you, it would be worth it the next 7 years of that deal if he won 10 games in those 7 years. You go.
That's why the Pedro deal was worth it.
Yeah, right.
Because the LA's gave him some legitimacy. And
that's the difference with Yankee fans is you give Sabathia all that money, he wins you a World Series. You know, him and Burnett pitched well and did all the things they did, and so you win. And now they're upset about it.
Yeah.
I look at it and go, you got one World Series out of that. That's priceless.
How would Robinson Cano look in that lineup right now? Would he be doing
in the
well?
Yankees lineup? He wouldn't be as good as Brian Roberts.
He's about 330, I think. And everybody say he doesn't have a lot of home runs. But
did you see Roberts the other day?
How are my Seattle Mariners doing? They're like 6 or 7 games over 500.
How about my Oakland A's?
Oh, you love the Oakland A's.
I called them at the beginning of the season. But I thought about you the other day because Roberts was, I think it was in Minnesota, he had 2 doubles and a triple. And everybody was going gaga over him. I thought, Mike Bo's got to be sick to his stomach right now because you said, you know, he'll have one good game. He said like a month, he'll have one good game. People go, see how great that is? Cano would have done that 4 or 5 days a week.
Yeah.
He'd hit a pair of doubles for you.
That's what he does. Like,
I know.
When he shows up to the park, he hits doubles and just missiles. Neil.
Yeah.
You got some duty? You serious or what?
I got some for you. First, let me clear some up. I don't hate the Cubs. I'm frustrated that the Cubs are not a better organization and a better franchise. They're on par with apple pie, and we got to sit here and they're the lovable losers. So let's just accept that they're bad. Like
you're like a disappointed.
I'm all for
it. You just expect more of them. Like it's like your son comes home drunk, and you're like, you know what? I just expect a little more out of you, Cubs.
I just, you know, it's like I think it would be such a boon to the economy. First of all, the economy itself. If the Cubs started winning and making an actual push, do you remember in 2003 when they were making a push? People were losing their minds, taking off from work. I mean, it was like a craze. It was a phenomenon. So if you were to do that now, I mean, with Twitter, holy crap, the internet would explode.
Yeah, it would be the end of times.
That city will erupt when they win.
Yeah.
It would be crazy on par with Boston. It would be that
there'd
crazy.
There'd be no crime.
Yeah, if you've been there, you know it's a Cubs town. I don't have this unbelievable hatred for the White Sox, but it's a Cubs town. That's what
it
is.
Of course it is.
And
yeah.
So when they are finally able to win, whenever that is, hopefully before the Mets, so I can be
you
right.
Do you think Chicago's more of a Cubs town than New York is a Yankees town, or is it comparable?
No, I would say probably you have more a higher percentage of people that are Cubs fans in Chicago. I mean, you go down to the South Side and it's White Sox everywhere, but there is a line there. There is a definitive line.
I just feel like if I meet someone in Chicago, I assume they're a Cubs fan.
Yeah,
meet someone from New York, it could be. I mean, there's definitely it's a Yankees town. It'll never not be a Yankees town.
The interesting thing about Chicago is like obviously New York with two baseball teams. You also have two football teams. You also have three hockey teams, if you include the Devils, and you have all these different things. So you'll get a Mets fan who's a Jets fan, but you'll find a Mets fan who's a Giants fan. In Chicago, you're a White Sox fan or a Cubs fan, but then you're also a Blackhawks, Bears, Bulls fan.
Yeah.
It's a very odd dynamic.
It's gotta be weird. Hanging out with Neil being a Mets, Jets, and he's a Mets, Giant.
Yeah.
I look at him as kind of like a half a Mets fan. I don't know that he's a real Mets fan, unless you're rooting for the Jets. All right, Neil, give us some duty. You serious, brother.
Haven't had it in
a
while.
Are you serious? Are you serious about that comment? The Jets are one of the worst football teams to watch. If they were a pleasantry to watch, I wouldn't be so opposed to them. But they, if I need a nap, turn on a Jets game, because that's what's going
to
happen.
Look at how many times they've gone to the playoffs in the last 10 years. This is not a joke of a team. It really isn't. Of all the teams I root for, they're the least of a joke of a team. The Jets, I mean, there's very rarely they're not competitive. People just
their,
they don't
their wins, football. Their wins should
are
be
exciting.
Considered wins. That's how bad their wins are. They make the other team play bad too. It's like it's a contagious what goes on in that field when the Jets suit up.
It's like a virus. We just eat away at you, Boone. All right, what do you got, dude? Can you give us something? I'm going to bring – we got a special guest in the studio. I'm going to bring him over for Duty You Serious.
Sounds phenomenal. I got to start off with this Kickstarter. Do you know what Kickstarter is?
I know exactly what Kickstarter is. I think we should do a Kickstarter account personally, but we'll get to that later. What do we got?
We absolutely need to start one. I'll tell you why. This guy's launched a Kickstarter campaign so he can make a potato salad and raise $40,000.
You are our internet guy. Set up a Kickstarter account. Why don't we set up a Kickstarter account to just buy up all of the Brooklyn Cyclone Stadium for Bobo's first pitch? We'll just buy them for the day. We'll have the whole stadium.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, if Kickstarter's not the way to go, I got a couple of alternative options that we could pursue, because enough is enough. We got to start making a push and letting people know who we are and what we do.
Exactly. Now, in studio right now, we do have one of the original Tri-State Sports guys, the original trio, the Big O, coming on board. Oh, I mean, would you be a – if we started a Kickstarter – now that you're like not really formally part of the team, if we started a Kickstarter account, I mean, what would be your donation? I want to put you right on the spot.
$5.
I was going to add a couple zeros to that. I thought you were going to say $500. Starting bid, $500.
What are you doing with this money?
We're going to do some things with it. Maybe make some potato salad. Maybe do
I got to tell you.
What would we do? I mean, what would
Neil
we need to do to get $500?
Neil telling me that he wants – that Starlin Castro is basically the key to the Mets' success, that really put me in a bad mood.
Oh, boy.
Awful mood.
He's angry, Neil. You just angered everyone here, including Leaping Lanny Poffo.
The guy's got a 325 on base percentage, and you want to give up a possible ace for him.
Yeah, I got to stir the pot, and I want to see something happen, and I don't think it's going to happen with Ruben Tejada at short and Syndergaard in the minors. I think you got to shake it up a little bit. And this is not a typical Mets move where you're bringing in some guy who's got a hearing aid and a cane walking around. It's a guy who has significant promise.
We have no idea how old he actually is, but I will tell you this. So Ruben Tejada's got a 353 on base percentage. You think you like him better than Castro?
And he's hitting eighth. You're going to have Castro hitting third. He's going to be in that big part.
He's going to
be
hitting second.
He's going to have about four home runs.
He's hitting second.
He's going to have four home runs.
Making things happen. Just making things happen.
Two Daniel Murphys. That'll be great.
We'll get him a Tucci Lumber. He'll make things happen. All right, Neil, what else you got, brother?
All right, this is from last week, so I'm kind of late to the game on it. But Warren Sapp leaving a $0 tip on a $69 bill because the waitress called him and his boys bullies. I mean, that's got to be an all-time low for Warren Sapp. This is a guy who's declaring bankruptcy, if I'm not wrong.
That is an all – and I'm a Warren Sapp guy.
What did
you
call them?
The waitress called them boys. Like, kept referring to them as boys. And he took offense to that. And so on the bill, he wrote $0, and he wrote, boys don't tip. That's a zero.
Well, Warren Sapp's a bad guy, but we've known that.
That's a hard – but I didn't know that. I honestly liked him. I thought he was like a – I mean, he's a bad person, but he's a likable bad guy.
Yeah, I like him, but he's a bad guy. I wouldn't want to eat dinner with him.
I would eat dinner with him in a heartbeat. I would. But so, yeah, that's an awful move. I mean
– so what? Here's my question. Here's my question. What does a waiter or server got to do for you to leave zero tip? Zero
Nothing.
Tip. What is they got to do?
There's never going to be a moment where I don't leave a tip. I'm not one of those guys that's like principle about it.
I've left a dollar tip before.
Never in my life would I do that.
Sometimes you have to send a message that they're not listening to.
Why? What does that do?
It lets that person
that's
know you're
bad
at your job. I wouldn't do it just for that type of thing.
If I physically watch somebody spit in my food, that'd be
I had a waiter that took my drink order and never came back again and like forgot to bring my dessert.
Oh, you're that guy. All right, I didn't know you were that guy. All right.
Oh my God, I'm that guy who wants my food. Yes, guilty as charged. I want my food.
People are doing, they're working.
They're not
Danny,
working if they're not giving me my food.
Danny, would you ever leave a $0 tip in any circumstance, short of spitting in your food, and you saw it?
No, I mean, I'll tell you a story. I was drunk one time at an IHOP.
course.
And,
why else wouldn't you be at IHOP?
And they actually brought me out, you know those like sliced up hash browns? They were completely raw.
Just potatoes?
They were just, they were ice cold. Ice cold. And I told the girl, and she goes, well, did you order them? Like, when did you order them or something like that? And I got snotty with her. She came back, and I left her like 75 cents in a glass of water.
No, you didn't.
I swear to God.
So he did do it. So there you go.
So there you go.
If you're going to do it, you got to do it creatively. So you leave 75 cents in the glass of water. Perfect.
But the thing about that was, she was snotty first. I don't mind if my service is slow.
How drunk were you? Were you drunk? Where?
No, I was like middle of the day, Saturday afternoon, drunk.
Mike's a sucker. He wants, he's, oh, everybody.
I want everybody to like me.
Everybody. I need to be loved.
I'm just a bleeding heart.
I don't. But if you're, I don't mind, slow service, like if my steak doesn't get there on time, I'll just say, hey, listen, I'm usually very nice with service people.
I've never sent food back. I'm not there ever.
Also, if the steak's not cooked right,
no.
Exactly.
You're crazy.
This guy's a sucker right here. He's a sucker.
I'm starting to agree with all of them.
You order a meal and it doesn't, and they give you a different meal. You're not going
to
send it back.
Tough luck. I won't go back at a restaurant. That's how I do it.
You want to bitch at me, seriously, because you asked when I ordered my hash browns? What's the difference? You didn't even cook them. That's why when the bill comes in, me and my buddy, it comes in $19.25 or something like that. Here's your $20 bill with the 75 cents in the glass. You want to be a snot nose?
To me, that's 60 cents more than she deserved.
I agree.
That sounds like
I agree.
I didn't realize I was surrounded by a studio full of horrible people. We're going to go into bonus time because I do not want this show to end. That's how good this show has been. What else you got, Neil?
Well, I got to throw my 2 cents in, pun intended. I used to be a waiter. I was the world's worst waiter, and I never got a $0 tip. The best I got, or the worst I got, was a stack of quarters. That was the ultimate. It was a $45 check. Guy gave me like $1 in quarters, maybe $2 in quarters. But that sent me a signal like, I need to get out of this game ASAP.
Can I tell you this guy that I grew up with, his name's Mike. I'll leave his last name out. He sent a mass text message out to people.
Mike from your wedding?
No. He's a waiter in one of the big steakhouses in Las Vegas, and he got an awful Yelp review, and he's just texting it out to people, like proud of it. And the woman basically called him and said, if you ever have the troll of a waiter named Mike, leave the building. And he's so proud of it, he sent it out.
Well, he's a bad guy.
He's proud of the negative Yelp review.
I know, that's weird.
Listen, I'm just
I just don't know why there's so much negativity. Maybe, you know, sometimes you get your food on time, to me, you know, so it's good. You just live with it, and you don't go back to the place.
You're going to be a doorman all your life, Mike?
Oh, is that what I am?
I will fight you right now. Not in a restaurant, you won't.
I'll take it outside. I'm respectful. That's how I was brought up. What else you got, Neil?
The All-Star game is coming up. I'm pretty psyched for it, but not because of the game, but because of the food and the service that you're going to get at Target Field in Minnesota. It makes me almost want to buy a ticket from a scalper. They got self-serve beer machines, lobster-filled corn dogs, and other amenities at Target Field. I mean, self-serve beer station alone has got to be reason to go.
That reminds me of the, you know, it was like the whatever 30th or 40th anniversary of that crazy craziness that happened in Chicago where they, well, I think it was Milwaukee, they did the 10-cent beers.
Cleveland,
they did the 10-cent beers, and then in Chicago they did the, we're going to burn all the disco night where there's fires in the field. And the 10-cent beer night
turned into a riot.
Luke Russert.
Yeah.
Tim Russert, his father. His father was at the game. He was in college. He said, he goes, I will tell you this. I came there with $2 and I left with 20 cents.
Yeah.
So he just crushed 18 beers. There were people having sex behind third base.
I don't blame
on the field. At one point, there was 10,000 people they estimated on the field. People were having sex out in the field. When I read that, I'm like, that can't be true. Even though you believe that it's going to be the clientele of like an all-star game is going to be like, all right, it's going to be hot, you know, hoity-toity because it's hard to get these tickets. I don't care. You get like a couple of stockbrokers in there with free beer. I don't care if free beer is for them anyway.
Stockbrokers.
It's going to be.
Like every finance.
Well, you don't think a couple of stockbrokers are just going to like, I will bet you. I will short you on 48 beers.
Well, that'll happen.
Yeah,
that happens.
There will be. I mean, that is insane. I didn't know Minnesota partied like that, Neil.
I'll short you 48.
I mean, you got a party like that. It's not like, oh, I want a party. It's like you need to party. That's the kind of necessity that you gotta live with when you're in Minnesota. So I'm down with it, and it seems like you know, they give you, you got to show an ID, you get a card, it's loaded with either 10 or 20 bucks, and they scan the card in the machine, you choose the beer you want, and you pour a maximum of 48 ounces at a time.
48 ounces? Is there a time limit in between?
Yeah, so, is there a time limit in between?
I don't see any time limits, folks. I mean, this is like Bud and Bud Light are costing 38 cents each, and then you got Shock Top and 312 costing 40 cents a piece. I mean, the only way you're not getting drunk is if you consume the brat dog, and that is a hot dog wedged inside a bratwurst wrapped in bacon squeezed in between a pretzel roll. Can I get an amen?
I mean, I got to tell you, that's one of those things where you're like, let me ask you to go to the All-Star game. I got a ticket. Let's go. And you're all excited, you know, and then you get there and you're like, now I didn't realize I had to get sloppy drunk. Like, I wasn't planning on it, but it's just got to happen. Right? I mean, that's not an option.
I mean, I don't want to say it's heaven, but it's pretty close.
Yeah. Jeez, Mono. All right. Well, we do got to go. We thank everybody. This is one of our better shows. We had thank you for Pete Rose, Lanny Poffo, all the callers and the rest. We're on every Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, TriStateSportsGuys.com. You can follow us on Twitter at TriState_sports. We're on Facebook, Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys. For Mike, Tony, Neil, Dan, and Noe, wish you a happy Wednesday. And let's get to, if you're interested in the Cyclones game, go see Bobo throughout our first pitch. Hit us up at TriStateSportsGuys@gmail.com. We'll see you next week, all right? Thanks.